Short Green. Agenda. Hello. Okay, if I can have your attention, we'll bring the meeting to order. Welcome to our October 12th meeting. This is Columbus Day, and thank you all for being here. We'll begin with a moment of silence.
Budget process, which we're fairly sure is not done yet. As your jurisdiction knows, not all the details have filtered down. And we have this creeping sensation that there's a hole starting to open in the current budget that's underway right now. I'm participating with our California State Association of Counties in what we're calling the Budget Task Force, trying to, first of all, put forward the concerns of local jurisdictions to the state legislature. I'll have to say that we are as frustrated as you and the League of Cities and everyone else with our inability to affect much change in that. But we're taking every opportunity to explain exactly what the smoke and mirrors, the gimmicks, the borrowing, and the other things that are so rife in the state budget process are doing to local jurisdictions and our mutual constituents. So with that said, tomorrow the board starts our 2010-2011 budgeting cycle with a strategic planning meeting where we're going to get an update on expected revenues, expected expenses, revisit our priorities, talk about the kinds of impacts that we might see as we go along. The story is basically that we're looking at probably around a $24, $25 million hole in our budget again, somewhere between $20 and $30 million expected expenses over expected revenues. That follows 2 years where we've closed an $18 million gap and a $30 million gap this past year. And we'll be approaching it in very much the same way we did there, a combination of one-time moves and unfortunately, there will be service cuts. And it looks like, unfortunately, many of those will be in the health and human services area. So that's our work for tomorrow. Been working on a number of things. I see Mayor Peters from time to time and less often other members of the council. We are certainly working, especially through the Council of Governments, on the census coming up for 2010. Very important. Working very hard to get a complete count of all those in our county. It means money in the bottom line, somewhere between $1,000 and $2,000 per capita. So even a 1% undercount runs into the millions of dollars in terms of federal funding that we might forego. Also, Mayor Peters and I have discussed a little bit about transit, and we know that that's another place where budgets are suffering. We're looking at Morro Bay Dial-A-Ride, the Dial-A-Ride in Los Osos, the Regional Transit Authority, the trolleys, the senior van in Cayucas, and trying to see if there might be ways in which we can consolidate those resources, provide better service, and reduce overhead expenses. I'm very much interested in keeping that conversation going as our transit funding is taking another significant hit in the year ahead. And then I guess the last thing is also about transportation. This happens to be rideshare month. I imagine that you have come across that one place or another. And there was, you know, ride the bus free last week, and there's carpooling and vanpooling. And the last week of the month is bike and walk week. And so I've been talking to Councilmember Smuckler about another ride into San Luis, trying to hold up the pride of District 2. Actually, he did pretty well last year. He only beat me by about 20 minutes getting down to San Luis. I consider that a moral victory of sorts. But I think somewhere in that last week, we're going to organize another ride from probably the vicinity of the roundabout down to San Luis. There might be breakfast involved. We're going to be trying to put Supervisor Patterson in his place. I think that'll be a good time. Keep your eye on the rideshare.org website, and we'll be talking about how we get that organized. Lots of other things going on. Look forward to working collaboratively with your staff and your council, things like the lease on the library and a whole bunch of other things. So with that, again, pleasure to be with you this evening.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Nice to see you.
Can I ask a couple of questions?
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
And one does have to do with the library, and the other one with, we're talking tonight, I don't know if you're aware, about a feasibility study for a regional swimming pool. I don't know if you're aware of that and to what extent the county may or may not be financially investing in that. I think at this point you're not, and from the budget that you just mentioned, does it look like there won't be any money forthcoming?
If we can hold on, and yeah, I think the short answer is no, there doesn't appear to be money forthcoming out of the county general fund budget, which is what funds our park operations. We have been involved with a couple of different groups, one in Morro Bay, one in Los Osos. There's a lot of conversation now, I know, about what makes sense, what sort of pool in what location. Certainly seems to me that with a combined population of 25,000, there's a good reason to have one place or the other. County Parks was participating.
Sharing. We have Phil Kaspersky of the Pelican Grill and Ken Scott of the Estero Inn, both new establishments right near each other on the Embarcadero. So come forward, tell us a little bit about your new grill.
Well, you can see I didn't bring, I brought someone prettier than Ken.
Kina and I are here to share this time. Would you like to begin, or would you like me to? We're here to announce the completion of two projects on the Embarcadero and introduce you to the businesses that occupy those. So with that, I'll defer to Kina.
Hi, I'm here. I'm not Ken. So I'm here to introduce you to the Estero Inn at 501 Embarcadero. We are now officially open, and we're also having a 10% off grand opening. So we'd like anyone to come by. We have coffee, and we have little noshes there for you. So welcome at any time to come by and have a little coffee in the morning or coffee in the evening, especially since it's getting cool in the afternoon. But we wanted to thank the city for all their assistance, and we're very, very pleased to be open.
I hear it's a beautiful place. I haven't been there yet, but I hear it's quite lovely.
You must come by. Ken has done an absolute fabulous job. Okay. It is gorgeous.
Great.
Thank you
And
very
after
much.
We visit, we can go across the way and...
And go to Phil's place. And I have a little, some pamphlets and stuff.
Okay, great.
Thank you, Ken. Before I begin, I'd like to everybody to know that we're using eco-friendly products. My name, by the way, is Phil Kaspersky. The project is the long-awaited octagonal building at 560 Embarcadero, now known as the Pelican Grill. It's been, I think, to the best of my knowledge, about a six-year struggle to see that thing come through between us and other folks. So with that, we have things such as these are made from cornstarch, our utensils, eco-friendly, biodegradable products, our cups, our to-go items. And so we're very conscious of that, and every opportunity that more of this stuff shows up, we'll be using it. So with that, let me begin. Good evening, Madam Mayor, City Council members, staff, and citizens of Morro Bay. My name is Phil Kaspersky, and on behalf of myself and my wife, Maureen, and our family, I'm here to introduce you to our new restaurant, the Pelican Grill. About 6 years ago, a local family started the process of remodeling the building that had been built in 1991 by Larry DeGaramore. A lot of you know him or knew him. And it was occupied by his business, known as the Captain's Cargo. For reasons not known to us, the Mexican restaurant never materialized, so my wife and I decided to revise the restaurant plan and open a barbecue-style restaurant. We started the process 2 years and 7 months ago. We did. So at long last, I'm able to stand before you and tell you that the octagonal building located at 560 Embarcadero and our restaurant are open for business. We have hired many local contractors during construction and local residents as restaurant staff. Our menu items include char-grilled hamburgers and chicken sandwiches, barbecued tri-tip and pulled pork sandwiches, and barbecued rib and chicken dinners. We also serve delicious Cobb salads with your choice of tri-tip or chicken, or without meat and a variety of dressings. We also serve garden burgers and other meatless menu items if you so desire. We have cold sodas, a variety of draft and bottled beers and wines. We brew excellent coffee, roasted locally just for us. Our tri-tip is premium cut from Harris Ranch. Our hamburger is a premium grade Angus beef. And our barbecued half chickens are from Tyson and a generous 1 1/4 pounds each. Everybody getting hungry? Good. You know where to find us. Speaking of barbecue, you may have seen our new gas and wood-fueled beauty in front of the grill. Not a day goes by that we don't have a group of admiring guys hovering around, checking it out. If, as they say, clothes make the man, then surely it follows that having a top-notch barbecue is a first step toward great barbecued food. We've built a clean, open kitchen so you can watch your meals as we prepare them. We have in- and outdoor seating, and our outdoor deck is large enough to seat 75 or more of you with a nice view of the bay. We're family-friendly and hope that you'll bring your children and grandchildren. Our deck is open to well-behaved dogs with well-behaved owners. We're proud of our new building and hope that you'll come in so we can show you around. Our location, again, is at 560 Embarcadero. If you don't know where that is, it's just past the Shell Shop. Our hours are 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. daily, and we have an abundance of parking. Thank you, city.
Thank you.
Our telephone number for call-in or take-out orders is 772-8400. Soon we'll have a special spot in our parking lot for to-go order pickups. If you call it in, we'll bring it out to your car. We hope that you and your friends will come and visit and dine with us at the Pelican Grill on the Embarcadero. And thank you for having us. Thank you for your support, city. It's been a wonderful process.
Here on Sunday the 25th, giving a program. We have going on a charity fundraiser raising money for the Morro Bay Community Foundation. It's sponsored by Fitness Works and includes participants from the Morro Bay Firefighters and the Coast Guard. It's a competition between the two. It's going to be held on Coleman Beach on Saturday, October 24th at 10 a.m. So we want you to cheer on our firefighters who have beaten the Coasties for the last 2 years running. They are also selling event t-shirts for $15 and raffle tickets, one ticket for $5 or five tickets for $20, and you can get those from Todd Gailey at the fire station, and his number is 550-4255. Let's see. Oh, I got a call today, and I'm sorry I didn't get the lady's name, so I hope she's listening. Concerned about the number of dead seals and elephant seals and sea lions that are being washed up on shore. Apparently there were quite a few this weekend. There is a toxic algae bloom out there. What that means is that the fish eat this algae, the marine mammals eat the fish, and they get sick and can die, and several apparently have. It has and even some dolphins have been killed this way. It has nothing to do with our sewer treatment plant, as was incorrectly reported. It is an algae bloom, which we can't control. Let's see. SLOCOG had a couple of things that I wanted to announce there. They need bicycle donations for their bike program. It's a workplace bike sharing program, and they need some more bikes. This is so that people who don't have transportation can share these bicycles and have use of them. And if you have a bike in any condition that still has wheels on it, please call 781-4462. They will recondition the bikes and use them for this service. Also, just for the information with SLOCOG, we had lost some transit money. I'm just going to read the paragraph. The suit against the state by California Transit Association goes to the Supreme Court. They're trying to recover more than $1.19 billion in transit funding. It was appealed to the state Supreme Court in August. An appeals court ruled the diversions violated state law, and an appeal was filed. So we'll see what happens there, but it's possible that some of that transportation funding may come back. State legislature, they're still trying to get things done, and I don't know what happened today, if anything happened that I should know, that we should know about, but they're trying to get back our gas tax money and Prop 1A securitization. Those are both things that hopefully will be decided before they adjourn this session. And I think that was all that I had. Betty?
The county
Water Resources Advisory Committee met this past week and had a full morning workshop on the county plan. If anyone wants to see it or make comment on it, it's on the county website under Public Works. The other meeting this week was with the Housing Trust Fund, and one of the items that came up for us was the Roanoke community asking for a $50,000 loan to help clean up some of their sewer issues.
Thank you. I have four quick announcements. One is for on behalf of the post office. They are on the 17th of this month going to be adjusting their hours. The new hours will be Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, and Saturday, 9 to 1. And I think there's not a sunset date on those adjustments for now. So that's once again starting on the 17th. Another quick announcement, I'm not sure if Mr. Algert was going to touch on this or not, but the Marine Interest Group is going to be meeting this Wednesday on the 14th, and as a future agenda item for the council and the community, I had an item about wave energy and trying to keep us updated about that, and so I was excited to see that that's going to be probably the lead topic at this meeting Wednesday, the 14th, at the Community Center from 6 to 9, and it should be pretty interesting. There's going to be representatives of PG&E there, and the MIG board and body will have a discussion with those representatives about potential projects and future options that may be coming to the county or at least the state. So that should be interesting, and I believe it will be aired by AGP. I'm working really closely with the Harbor Department and a group of locals that are really interested in helping memorialize the spirit of Jesse King, who was a member of our Harbor Department and also really active with our junior lifeguard and lifeguard programs. He passed on a while back, but we have organized the first of what we hope will be many memorial paddles. And our first one, it's going to be from the Cayucas Pier, finishing through the harbor mouth, and Coleman Park will be the finish line there. The paddle's open to all human-powered paddlecraft. It's Halloween morning, the 31st, starting at 8 o'clock, about paddling in the race. We're going to have some pretty strong safety parameters about who can participate, but if you're interested in helping with the race or paddling in the race, you can call 995-1993. It's going to be a modest fee to join, and again, all those proceeds go to the Junior Lifeguard and Lifeguard programs. And those demos and so on, the celebration, that's all going to be free for the public. We're hoping that people will come out and enjoy the day. Most of that celebration will be at the old skate park space. And music, again, will be included with that. And just a quick update for the council. Our tree committee is meeting this Wednesday as well from 4 to 5 at the community room. And we're moving forward with the concept of an Arbor Day celebration on the 15th of November, and that's going to be at Lila Kaiser Park. We've worked with the Rec and Parks Department on identifying a space there that could use some beautification, and we're kind of seeing ourselves as the committee and the resources that we have there as a little bit of a turbo boost for the department to come in there, and the plan is to put a lot of nice trees in the ground, mulch it, and make it look really nice to augment that space and beautify the neighborhood. So we'll get some more information out to the community about that, but the events will be November 15th, which is a Sunday, and it'll be most of the afternoon is what I'm anticipating. And I see Sean back there, who's a member of the committee. He's going to supply us with our mulch and much more. So besides that, I think that's all I have.
Okay.
And Mr. Woods is going to follow up with a couple of announcements as well.
Carla? Good evening. Thank you. I'd like to remind everybody that it is homecoming at Morrobey High School this week, so make sure you get a chance to go to the football game Friday night. There'll be a parade, and we're playing San Ynez, my alma mater. Last week I was in San Luis at the Maxine Lewis shelter, and since Rick's not here, I would just like to remind everyone here and at home that they are still in need of volunteer groups to provide a meal and serve, fix and serve meal. They don't have all their dates filled yet for the rest of this year. They're close, but our 4-H club's going to be in the local 4-H club doing two of those nights because they still have not been able to meet those needs. Also, at Prado Day Center, I believe. There's a box down at City Hall I saw that Rotary has down there. Anyone can drop off supplies, and at the library. Staying on that same note, the Salvation Army in Morro Bay right now is giving out approximately 2,000 boxes of food to families between Morro Bay and Los Osos right now a month. So hopefully we can get the community in there and start dropping off some supplies for food drives and things. And they have told me that they will be starting their bell ringing a week early this year because of their financial needs. So they are looking for bell ringers to start signing up here in the next few weeks, and they'll be starting the week before Thanksgiving this year. So they'll be doing 5 weeks, and they are also in need of volunteers for that. So that's it.
Okay. Thank you. And for our staff reports, we have Harbor. Had a lot of things going on this week, Rick.
Yeah, I'll try to keep them short. Good evening, Madam Mayor and Council. First, it's wonderful to think about getting a little rain early this season, but the forecast now is for winds up to 60 knots, gusts up to 60 knots tomorrow, so 60 miles per hour on shore. So check your houses, and if you do own a boat, see if you can check your lines and check your bumpering. We've been trying to work with people all day and checking ourselves, but it does look like it's going to blow pretty good through tomorrow evening, tomorrow night. We did have the annual conference for the California Marine Affairs and Navigations Conference in town last week. That's CMANC, California Marine Affairs and Navigations Conference, is all of the ports and harbors, the public ports and harbors in California, and many marine-dependent and marine-oriented businesses that support the coastal economies and ports and harbors. There was over 80 registrants, and I know Janice was hosted by Morro Bay, and Janice was at a number of the meetings, and we had a lot of feedback from people how much they enjoyed the community, the meetings, how many folks were going to come back and see us again in another time. We had 7 presentations, everything from the federal liaison for the California Department of Transportation, because so many of the ports and harbors have important transportation and infrastructure issues that they're working through the federal government. Presentation on our Harbor Maintenance Trust Fund, all the way down to a couple presentations on sustainable communities and the fisheries work that we're doing here in Morro Bay especially. And we had a chance to feature some of the things that are going on in Morro Bay, and it was well received. So it was a good meeting, and I really appreciated the support of the mayor and the city council getting that in. You covered the last one, is the Marine Interest Group, and thank you very much. You pretty well covered it. I would just also mention that we are asking the Marine Interest Group to approve a letter of support for the third year of our exempted fishing permit application to the Pacific Fisheries Management Council, and this will continue as long as hopefully we'll continue making these applications in the exempted fishing permit effort, which is adding fishing and business to our community. This fall, we're actually seeing a significant difference through the exempted fishing permit. We hope to get it granted again next year and possibly the year after until they implement ITQs or individual transferable quotas in the fisheries ground fish management. Thank you.
Okay. Joe?
Good evening, Mayor and Council. This last weekend, we had our annual Oktoberfest softball tournament. We brought in 12 teams. Out of the 12, 8 were from the Valley. So we try to make the best when those teams come over. The winners for the men's category was Forbidden, and they were from Bakersfield, and this was a co-ed tournament. And the co-ed winners were the Bombers from Visalia. So we always enjoy the teams when they come over from the Valley. That, I think, is close to 18th or 19th annual Oktoberfest tournament, somewhere around there. This Sunday at Cal Poly, the 1 o'clock game, women's soccer. At halftime, we've got 2 of our teams from the under-8s that will be playing. So if you have an interest in soccer and you want to head out and see some Cal Poly soccer, you'll be treated with our youngsters under-8s at halftime. Our skate park, we've got a lot of development over at the skate park at the over at Rockies, the teen center. And the contractors working on site should be having that finished up by the end of this week. So we're pretty excited about a soft opening at the skate park at the teen center. And the last I want to comment on is the Senior Health and Fitness Fair, which is October the 26th, which is the fourth Monday of the month, at the Morro Bay Community Center. We have a variety of programs. They're all free. There are flu shots. They are not free. Check our website. We've got a quick link to more information and a flyer on the event. But some of the truly free things are senior fitness testing, memory screening. We have cholesterol testing, as well as a variety of information booths that will be there. So if you want more information, there's flyers on the city website, quick link there, and that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. And Bruce, public services.
Thank you, Madam Mayor and Council. Just a few things to give you a quick update on. We've had the field review for the North Main Bike Lane project. That was a stimulus-funded project. So that project's progressing. We met with Caltrans on the field, and so we're on the shorter term. We should get the design probably next month or December. We're happy to tell you that we've completed the first round of plan checks in a really good turnaround time for the fire station, living quarters, administrative offices. So that doesn't mean it's all done, but we've got the corrections and scrubbed through the plans at the plan check stage. So now it's back to our designers to work through that and clean the plans up. So that came in and out within weeks. So we're proud of that turnaround on that project. And then the housing element is out for review. I have a copy in your council read file. It's also available on the city webpage. That will be going to the Planning Commission next Monday, October 19th. And then we're targeting the housing element to come to the council. I believe it's the end of your last meeting in this month. So if anybody would like to review that, copies are available at the library on our city website. You can see one in our office. They're available for reproduction. So we're finally getting through the housing element. And lastly, we just let everybody know we have dropped off a truckload of sand across from the city courtyard. We're preparing for the storms coming on. So if sandbags are available at the commercial providers, our hardware stores and so forth, farm supply in the community. But we had the sand dropped off today, so it's right across the street from the courtyard on Atascadero Road. Dylan will provide the report later on about the mandatory water conservation requirements. But if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay. Yeah, I know. Betty and I were just talking about that. It is on our agenda later, but if you should have got this notice in the mail, please pay attention. This is going to limit water use during the period while the state water is off and unavailable to us. So we will be discussing that in more detail. A couple of things that I was reminded of when Rick was talking about the CMAG group, they were here in 2007 for their conference, and several of the people that had been here for the first time then told me that they'd come back since then because they love Morro Bay so much. One gal said, I was here in 2007 and I brought my family back three times since then. This is my fourth time back. So that's how important it is to get people here, even in these small conferences. This was a couple hundred people, and they do come back. They just have to discover us the first time. And another thing, just a little note of pride, the mayors meet once a month. And it varies. You know, we rotate the cities, and so it was Morro Bay's turn this time. And I'd taken them to most of our local restaurants. Noah catered one time. So I'm trying to think, what can we do? And so I took them out on the Chablis. It was beautiful. It was last Friday. Bruce was with us. The weather was gorgeous. And all of the mayors were just so excited by what we have here. They didn't even know the Chablis was, you know, touring the bay and all of that. So the big concern now is who's going to top it next time, which I'm kind of smug about. But it's a way of bringing people back here because several of them said that they could have events out there on the Chablis. So anytime we have the opportunity to make that kind of awareness to people, it's good. So just all of you kind of think about that when you have your visitors come into town. Okay, with that, closed session report, Rob.
Yes, good evening. Prior to tonight's regular session, council met on closed session on two separate items. The first item was conference with labor negotiator. This is the time when the council discusses the terms and compensation paid to employee groups and gives instructions to the designated representative. The other item discussed was real property transactions. The two properties discussed are the properties for sale at 781 Market Street and the property at the corner of Pacific Street and Market Street. As to both of these items, no action was taken by council that requires reporting under the Brown Act.
Thank you. And with that, we'll begin our public comment period. Please come to the podium, limit your comments to 3 minutes, and on something that's not on our public hearing agenda this evening.
Good Hi, I'm Leslyn Keith, and I'm here with the Central Coast Survivors. We're a all-women cancer survivor dragon boat team. We have our boat here in Morro Bay. So we have several of the members of the team. Sean is actually a member of the community team. We have the Morro Dragons that Los Osos Fitness formed a team as well. So he's here representing them. And we wanted to make sure that everybody was aware that we're having a Awakening of the Dragon ceremony that's going to be at Tidelands Park this coming Saturday, 2 o'clock. I have some flyers here for people. It's a Chinese traditional ceremony that brings good luck to the city, especially since we're going to have city officials there helping to awaken the dragon. And it'll make our dragon boat especially fierce so that when we go on to races that we'll do well. Our team is formed about 2 years ago. We just got our own dragon boat in June through a donation from the from an oncologist in town, Dr. Spillane, and Dr. Malone gave us a donation. And so we've gone to now several races around California, Arizona, and brought home lots of medals. So we're doing very well. Our next goal is that we're going to try to find corporate sponsors so that we can send our whole team can go to these faraway races that not very many of our teams can afford that. Our members can afford the expense of that, so we're trying to raise funds for that. Like I said, I have the invitations here, and I wanted to invite everybody who'd like to come to that at 2 o'clock on Saturday. And I know I forgot to say stuff, so anybody else want to say anything?
I would love to say something.
Okay.
Go ahead. Hi, I'm Sean Ellis. I live right up the street, 1187 Morro Avenue. And I started on the Dragon Boat Race team. I've been in the boat 6 times. I've been to 4 races in California, Seattle, Treasure Island in San Francisco, in Long Beach. And the reason why I'm here today is to inform you folks. It may not be the right word, lucrative, but it is incredible that if this venue comes to Morro Bay, everyone that owns a business here will get something out of it. Each boat has 20 paddlers or 22? There's 22 people on the boat. Each team generally brings 2 boats to a race. Friday and Saturday night, we stay at hotels and we eat at restaurants. And most teams have 4 or 5 boats full of people. This isn't a rock concert. They're athletes. There's minimal security needed. And it's just incredible. So that's why I'm here. Okay, I'm a rambler. All right. I was the only one that did that.
Would you allow us 1 more minute?
Thank you. Oh, okay.
Would you?
Yeah.
As you can see, my name is...
Could you use the microphone so we can hear you? Just pull it down.
My name is Jean Lamoureux. I'm a 27-year that I've been living in Morro Bay. As you can see, dragon boaters come in all shapes and sizes. We are all cancer survivors, this group. The Morro Dragons are not, but they're welcome on our boat. And we do race, but we also have some that don't race. And it's very important to us that we have this Dragon Boat Association and that we belong to the Central Coast Survivors. And we hope you will come out. And as I say, we're in all shapes and sizes and all ages. So please join us. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Can I leave you these?
Madam Mayor, where that's going on, I had the fortune over the weekend to hear how this started, and it began because breast cancer survivors need to exercise a certain muscle, and the stroke they use on this boat is what strengthens them. And so it's started as kind of a need thing, but turned into a thing that became a life-giving thing and entertaining for the rest of the public.
Great. Well, hopefully we'll get out there and support them. Okay. Good evening, Mayor and City Council.
I'm Bonnie Blackledge, and I'm a resident of Morro Bay. I can't stay for the entire meeting, but I did want to address item D3, which is the last item on the agenda. Item D3 has to do with a feasibility study for the Aquatic Center. I'm hoping that the City Council will approve funding of this study only if the scope of the study is expanded to include the recommendations as suggested by the Morro Bay Community Pool Foundation. The expanded scope that was recommended will better serve the interests and needs of the citizens. It would then become a feasibility study for a community aquatic center that would be located for public use and open year-round. Besides emphasizing community access and best location, these recommendations also ensure the city has oversight of the feasibility study funding and process. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you.
Good evening, Council. Nancy Bast, resident. I've recently become aware that our beloved library, their lease is up next year, which isn't very far away. And for some reason, the Council hasn't considered the county's proposal that has been given to the city last January and has been talked about for a couple of years. I don't know if you all know the background of our library. It's our library. It's a community library that was funded by the people of the community. The city donated the land in the early 80s, and there was a heroic effort to fundraise in order to build the building. The architect designed a building that could be afforded by the people of the community, and every week there were fundraisers for a couple of years or maybe even longer, book sales, yard sales. Our silent movie star, Gladys Walton, even had a showing of one of her hit movies from the 20s at the Bay Theater. And finally, after weeks and weeks and years of watching the thermometer on the hand-painted sign where the library is, the goal was met, and our librarian, Jude, moved her library from the little building where the Castaways is on Morro Bay Boulevard to our present library. That is such a wonderful thing for our community. But for some reason, the council has not seen the proposal from the county since it was given to the city in January, and to my knowledge, except for the mayor. And I think it would be deserving to give the community a reason for why it hasn't been approved, and just what the stalling is.
Thank you.
Hello, Madam Mayor, Council Members, City Staff, residents of Morro Bay, and Supervisor Gibson. I'm Peter Candela, Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce, and I have three things just to talk about, so I'm going to be really quick and short. First of all, any successful event can only be successful if there are good volunteers. And our Avocado Margarita Festival is a huge success, and special thanks to, there's so many people, there's 63 actually volunteers that took over that festival to help us, and certainly the council members, a lot of the city staff, and even Bruce Gibson lent it a hand in making that a success. So thank you one and all, certainly the staff at Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce, but there's so many other people to thank, so I'm just going to say thank you, thank you, and thank you. The second is the I want to invite everyone to the Business Expo this Thursday, Community Center, 4 o'clock to 7. It's a chance to our businesses, to we highlight our businesses, and you can come and meet them, see their products and their services. And talk about the business in general. It's a great time to maybe mingle and talk about different things. Also, a special guest is going to be present. That's Israel Dominguez. A lot of you know of him from the Cuesta College Business Assistance Program in a different capacity, but he is also a world-class guitar player. And he will honor us by being there for about an hour and a half with the world tunes that he is going to share with us. So that's another reason to come. Thirdly, every business has an opportunity or should have the opportunity to be successful and have everything laid out, hopefully, so they can be successful. Tonight, I guess, on your agenda is one of the buoys bar that... sometimes we need a little help. I'm hoping that the council members maybe look at them as a opportunity to help them in some way to be successful. We all try to strive to make businesses work in Morro Bay, and sometimes we need they need a little assistance. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Is this little Goody working tonight? I guess not.
Okay. Is he coming?
Yes.
Oh, he's going to fix it. Good. I don't know if you can read these, but they're a couple of cartoons I wanted to use. Let's see if that works. There we go. Probably can't read it, but you get an idea. Good evening, Mayor, Council, and fellow citizens who are watching. My name is Nancy Johnson. And the family and friends of Chuck Meissner are planning a memorial bench for him on Harbor Walk. I hope I can get through this. Deep breath. We've secured a bench facing a bay across from the power plant. Currently, excuse me, I'm sorry, I thought I had this figured out. Currently, we're soliciting contributions to help pay for the bench. The cost, including the plaque, is $1,400. Chuck was a very important part of our Morro Bay community, whether he agreed with you or not. He was always a gentleman. His letters to the editor, as well as city officials, are legend. Chuck was the leader of the Morro Bay Beautiful Cleanup Brigade, training new recruits and supplying bags and grabbers for the crew. He was an artist, as his clever cartoons illustrate, and an active member of the Morro Bay Art Association for years, maintaining their building and helping to set up Art in the Park. He was a member, excuse me again, of the Chamber of Commerce and a charter member of the Slow Botanical Garden. He was also a longtime member of the Morro Bay Presbyterian Church, leading their landscaping and garden project for several years. He ventured off to Santa Barbara for hearings and often attended local hearings on the power plant. He was a true friend to all who knew him and to the city of Morro Bay. As our mayor said at his memorial, he never missed an opportunity to support a city event. If you would like to contribute to this bench, please send a check in any amount made out to the city of Morro Bay to me, Nancy Johnson, at 1165 Morro Avenue, Morro Bay. 93442, and we'll hold on to those until we get the amount necessary. And I apologize for not speaking clearly. Thank you.
Thank you. He's a special guy.
Good evening, Council. Susan Brown, MV Transportation. We have the Dial-A-Ride service now. The trolley's had its last weekend until next season, Memorial Day, and I wanted to talk a little bit about the services of Morro Bay Dial-A-Ride. We operate from 6:45 in the morning until 6 p.m. at night, Mondays through Fridays, and we actually, everyone can ride. Sometimes people ask us, what age group can ride? Who can ride? Well, it's for everybody, all the citizens of Morro Bay. And we transport people to and from places within the city of Morro Bay. The regular fare is $2 per ride, each person, each way. And then there's a discounted fare for people that are disabled or seniors, $1.50. Some of the things on our brochure that bring out that Morro Bay Dial-A-Ride was established May 2, 1977 by the Morro Bay City Council to serve residents and visitors. And so, thank you, Council, a long time ago. And we'd sure like to keep it going forever. The Morro Bay vehicles, as it says, travel within the city limits. We take calls. We like people to call us a couple hours in advance, but they can actually, a lot of people will call and say, I'm ready to go. Is there any way I can go now? And they certainly pretty often can get a ride very shortly. Our drivers are prompt. Our on-time performance is within 95 to 100% all the time, so people can count on getting a ride when they need it. And we pick drivers to be friendly, helpful. If people need any physical assistance, we have wheelchair accessible vans. We can take walkers on those vans, on those lifts, and even if people can't find the way to get up the stairs, they can hang on and ride the lift. So, like we said, everybody can ride. Also, we sell punch passes, so people don't always have to have their fares. A regular pass is $20 for 11 rides, and a discounted pass is $15 for 11 rides. They make great gifts. People come into our office and purchase those passes because they can give them as a gift, just like a gift card. So anyone's welcome to come in the office. Our number is 772-2744, or come in and meet us and ask us any questions. Thank you. Thank you.
My name is Nancy Nagano. The Nagano family has lived and farmed in this area since 1915. I grew up here. My husband, Brian Rosario, and I purchased the Bowie Tavern a little over a year ago, and we are proud to be business owners in Morro Bay. We live just outside the city limits. When we were married 10 years ago, Brian came here from Los Angeles, even though his career was there because I needed to be here with my elderly parents. Since then, Brian has often worked in Los Angeles due to the lack of employment opportunities here. We adopted two children from Bangladesh and are raising them here. For several years, we have been looking for a local business with sufficient cash flow to support our family so that Brian could be with us here in Morro Bay. My 91-year-old mother has been caring for our children while I work, but it's hard on her to do everything necessary for growing children, and I often have to be in San Luis Obispo. When the Bowie Tavern became available just a few minutes from our home, we were excited that Brian would at last have employment to support our family right here in Morro Bay. After we purchased the bar, the liquor license was transferred, and we learned that the Morro Bay Police Department requested 12 restrictions on our license, all based on the actions of the previous owners. We were shocked because the previous owners only had 5 restrictions, and none of those limited the ability to be profitable. These new restrictions limit our hours, limit the enjoyment of our patrons, and keep the bar from being able to support us. On Fridays and Saturdays, if someone comes into the bar at 10:30 or 11, after work or after a movie, they really only have time for one drink before the last call. Multiply that by the number of people in the bar on a busy night, and the loss is in the thousands of dollars every weekend. If patrons start dancing to the jukebox, we have to ask them to stop. There have been no substantiated complaints of noisy music from the bar since we have owned it, yet we cannot have live music of any kind. As far as we know, no other bar in Morro Bay has these restrictions. We did consider challenging these restrictions last year, but we wanted to be good neighbors and felt certain we could show that we are serious about making the buoy the neighborhood gathering spot we and our neighbors want it to be. We understood that the restrictions would be lifted after 1 year, but now, even though the bar has not been responsible for law enforcement problems since September of 2008, the city staff insists that we must still have these restrictions. We cannot make a living from the bar with these restrictions in place. We have proven over the past year that we are responsible owners, and the buoy has become the neighborhood gathering spot it was when the neighborhood grew up around it. We respectfully request that the council file no written objection to the Buoy Tavern's request to modify its liquor license. Brian and I are here to respond to any questions the council might have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi there. I'd like to introduce myself. I'm the manager at the Buoy, 2940 Main Street. My name is Kelly Ray. My husband and I have been Morro Bay residents for almost 4 years. I've been bartending for 10 years. I manage the busiest bar and nightclub in Lompoc, California for 6 years. I work closely with the police department and gang task force unit. In 2002, I participated in a responsible beverage serving course with Council on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse through the Lompoc Police Department. I've been using these techniques and tools I learned for the last 7 years and teaching the girls of the bar. I've worked with Brian and Nancy for almost a year, and not only are they my employers, but they're like my family now. I'm here to help build a successful business for Brian and Nancy. I'm very passionate to provide a fun, safe, and relaxed atmosphere for our patrons, who are mostly locals, the majority of them living in the neighborhood around us. Thanks for your support.
Thank you.
My name is George Caravana, 2916 Alder Avenue in Morro Bay. I live right directly behind the Buoy Bar. I've been there for 25 years, and the bar was there before me. Since the Naganos and Brian have taken it over, it's been a great bar. No more police calls. There used to be calls more than one a day, many a week. Now there are none. Yet there are still people that are against their restrictions being lifted. They've done everything they can to make it a good place for the neighborhood. Whenever they want to do something, they go door to door and ask neighbors if it's okay. If they want to have an event, they go to the police department to get their okay. It just seems like they're getting put through a lot of hoops for no reason. They're here to make a living, and the neighbors are all behind them. There are very few that don't want him there, but I think it's a great thing, and they deserve a chance. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the City Council. Thank you for the opportunity to address you this evening. My name's Jane Heath. I'm a resident of Morro Bay, but I'm here this evening as an attorney representing Nancy Nagano and Brian Rosario, who own the Buoy Tavern. I have a couple of comments regarding Brian and Nancy's request that the restrictions on their liquor license be lifted. Please note that the restrictions did not come from the council, and my clients had no opportunity to be heard before they received a restricted transfer of the buoy license last year. The police department acted directly with the ABC board without council input. Nancy and Brian were not advised that this matter would be considered tonight until 3 days ago, when the city manager returned Brian's phone call requesting status. That really doesn't seem very fair when you're considering something that could affect someone's business, to give them notice a matter of a few days before. As a result of the late notice, they scrambled to prepare and were unable to gather all the folks that would have liked to speak with you tonight. I have a couple of issues with the staff report I want to bring to your attention. The report does not make clear that the prior problems in the bar that resulted in the 12 restrictions were all under the previous ownership. When Brian met with the city to discuss transferring the license, he was told there were over 40 police calls to the bar in a six-month period before he bought the bar. In the year since, the staff report itself shows 9 calls. What the report does not say is that 6 of those initiated by the bar were the bar doing exactly what the police had instructed them to do in the event of a problem, to call them. Those should not now be counted as reasons to restrict their license. The report also does not reflect that the one noise complaint that was made in the last year was unsubstantiated when the officers arrived. There really has only been one law enforcement incident in the past year, and that involved an utterly unprovoked assault and battery that occurred on the public street, not in the bar area, and not on the premises. Brian Rosario was attacked and brutally beaten after he was confronted a person who'd backed into a vehicle. The staff report doesn't mention that fact. It emphasizes instead Mr. Rosario's wearing of a guard's uniform as a violation of the restrictions. I understand council's now been informed that Mr. Rosario is in fact a certified security guard. It is disturbing, however, that the staff included the information in the report and reported it as a violation to the ABC without any investigation to determine whether Mr. Rosario was so licensed. And of course, Mr. Rosario was the victim of that crime. The staff report also does not make clear that not one neighbor has complained about the bar since the Rosarios have owned it. I'd like the council to ask the staff about four letters they received. It's our understanding that some of those came from tenants who were instructed by their landlord to write those letters. That's not really much in the way of fair play and not a basis for the council to make a decision. I'd like to ask for a little more time given the fact of the very short time that these folks had.
Sorry, if you could just wrap it up in one sentence.
Okay. You know, sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name. And that's the kind of place Nancy and Brian are trying hard to provide in North Morro Bay. They should be allowed to have a chance to make a living doing it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor and Council Members. My name is Rick Gilligan. I'm a Morro Bay resident and treasurer of the Morro Bay Community Pool Foundation. My comments are in reference to a new business item D3, which is approval of $15,000 of park and lieu funds. When the staff report states that our group has split into two groups, it implies that the Morro Bay Community Pool Foundation is no longer working towards the goal of a community aquatic center on the North Coast. That couldn't be further from the truth. We continue to research and raise funds for the construction of a new community aquatic center on the North Coast through our First Lap campaign. Our support of existing North Coast aquatics facilities is just one additional initiative that's underway. We support and are hard at work to ensure that the North Coast does not lose any more of its existing aquatics facilities and programs in the current economic crisis. Last week, our foundation sent each of you a letter via email with background information and our thoughts and concerns about the request, which is before you now. We urge the council to consider the following before approving funds for a feasibility study. The City of Morro Bay would be providing the largest share of funds to conduct the proposed study. Recognizing a limited scope of the proposed feasibility study and the applicant's request, we ask that the council also require additional community-based questions as referenced in our letter to ensure a fair and balanced feasibility study. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, Mayor, Council. My name is Lee Bragg. I live on 2990 Alder, so I'm about three houses down from the Bowie Bar, and I'm just here to talk on Brian's behalf. I've seen the ownership go from the last owner to Brian, and what I've seen him done is he's changed the bar immensely. It's a place that you actually can go into now. I don't think it's the drug den that it was at one time. We go to bed early at night, and I've never been waken up or disturbed by anybody coming or going from the bar since Brian has owned it. And I think he's trying to really do a good thing in the neighborhood, and I trust what he wants to do, and I'd just like to see him given the chance to operate a business and be able to make a living. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Madam Mayor, City Council, City Administrators, my name is James Berry. I am a resident of the neighborhood of the Bowie Bar. I am much behind it. Prior to Brian owning the bar, we could hardly sleep at night until after 2 o'clock because of the noises and the fights and the mobile drug labs. We were worried about what was happening in our neighborhood. It has been cleaned up. My wife and I and our neighbors walk down there at least once a week and have a couple of cocktails and walk back home. We feel perfectly safe, and it's a clean place. I support his lifting of the restrictions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Bill Martini. And, yeah, I just wanted to kind of follow up with the Nagano family. They're a very honorable family. Burnett's went to school with them. They've been here forever. I do realize the previous owner did set a bad precedent, but I really view this as almost discrimination in inheriting the previous owner's baggage. We've been in there, and I think to parrot some of the past people, it is more like Cheers, family, low-keyed, and they shouldn't be penalized. Thank you.
Thank you.
Barbara Dore, I have a Morro Bay. I have a question on D3, the feasibility study for the pool in Morro Bay. Is that only looking at the feasibility of locating a pool within the city limits of Morro Bay? Because it's using Morro Bay's in lieu fees that should go to improvements in parks and recreation for Morro Bay. So is it looking outside of the city or just inside the city?
We'll be discussing that. Thank you. I'm sorry, we can't have a dialogue right now. At the end of public comment, we'll answer the questions, okay?
Okay, then if you're looking outside the city, I would encourage you not to use that $15,000. We have limited funds in Morro Bay. You want to increase taxes, additional revenues, and please keep the $15,000 for looking for a feasibility within Morro Bay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is James Hayes. I've been a resident of Morro Bay for about 15 years. I've coached at the high school. I teach at Morro Bay, San Luis Obispo High, and I'm also a patron of the Bowie Bar. It's a family atmosphere. It's way better than it was before the previous owners, and I'm for you lifting the restrictions because I think it's a really good place for everybody to come and visit. The age is between 21 and 90, all the visitors that come there and all the people that come there from out of town, and I would really appreciate if you'd lift the restrictions. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, we'll bring it back to council. There are a couple of questions raised. Andrea, the library contract, when are we going to be dealing with that?
The council has seen the conditions. We're currently working on the format of the document to go back to the county. I've informed Brian Reynolds that it should be back in a couple of weeks, so as well as Jude Long.
Okay. Rob, did you have something to add to that?
No, we certainly know when the lease is going to expire. We don't see any problems with the negotiation, and it'll be in front of you before the next one expires. So I don't know. You know, we do have agendas that we have to set and things we work on. It's one of those items that's on the agenda, and it will come forward, and we don't see any problems whatsoever with the extension of the lease.
Okay. And then the other question for the last woman, the pool foundation money, is that just for a pool in Morro Bay? I know we're going to be discussing it later, but just so she gets that answer before she leaves.
Good evening. The $15,000 that's in front of you now is to complete the second phase of the feasibility study, which would be solely designing a pool in Morro Bay.
Okay. So that's the answer to that question. Okay. With that, we'll take anything else that anybody want to comment on? Okay. We'll take a short break, and then we'll start our public hearings. Okay, here we are. We're going to start with our public hearings, and first one is city's intention to sell city-owned property at the northeast corner of Market Avenue and Pacific Street and at 781 Market Street, which, in case you don't know, is the Brannigans, Anthony's, whatever you want to call it, and the parking lot across the street from that. Rob.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. This is on your agenda pursuant to your action at your last council meeting when you passed a resolution of your intent to sell the property at the corner of Market Avenue and Pacific Street, and also the lot at 781 Market Street, which is the former Brannigan's. The purpose of this public hearing is to allow for any person to protest the sale of this property. The protest must be in writing, delivered to the clerk of the body, or made orally at this hearing. If someone does protest this evening, then you'll have to pass the intent to move forward by four-fifths vote. That would require all fourths of you because it's four-fifths of the members. So that's my brief staff report. I'm here to address any concerns. We don't have any sale right now, but as you do know, we have a sign up for sale and do have one offer as we currently sit, but that'll come forward. The final sale would also come forward as a public hearing when we do have a final offer.
Okay, any questions? All right, this is a public hearing. Anyone wishing to speak on this item, please come forward.
Barbara Doerr, Morro Bay. I presume with the motion or the recommended motion to seek bids, if you approve that motion, how broadly would you seek, would you send out requests for bids on the property? Or have you decided
okay,
that
we'll
yet?
Respond. Thank you.
Good evening again, Bill Martini. Just two quick questions. Are you selling two separate properties, or are these being sold as one? And the price on both properties? And is this already a done deal? Is this already sold and you have an offer pending, or is this actually being listed now? In other words, just to kind of get more information for the general public, because there's a lot of the public out there that something like this is very attractive. So it could be almost a form of advertising what you're selling, the price, and you could possibly get a higher price or more interest in it that way. So those are just a couple quick questions. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay, Rob, you want to respond to those questions? We'll bring it back to
sure.
the council.
We've listed it with Stanley Craig of Morro Bay Realty. So he's got a multiple listing out there. So we are open for any bids. There are two parcels. Both parcels are listed for $1,950,000. And we would accept offers on either one of the properties, although we, as a council has discussed in closed session without, you know, telling about those discussions are, is that the Brannigan's building doesn't have any parking to it. So it would be very difficult to sell that building and turn it into a commercial business without having some form of parking, and that's why we think the two are linked together. But we would take separate offers if someone wanted to and had an idea. The one parcel is on the bluff, and it's only the Brannigan's building. It does not include the parking lot down below. The city council has directed staff not to put that property up for sale. That's the property on the Embarcadero. So it's the Brannigan's building and then the parking lot across the street. And it's, again, been listed with the multiple listings.
Okay.
And although there is an offer, we're accepting any other offers that would come in.
Right. There's not an accepted offer at this time. Okay. Council, comments? Anybody?
My only comment, and Ms. Borchard has followed up on this, but the idea for now for us to consider perhaps if we do make a sale to develop a special fund perhaps that could be focused on community development and perhaps achieve some of the goals that we thought we might want to accomplish within the redevelopment conversation. That's just kind of food for thought at this point, but I'd like to keep that in the back of our mind as we move forward with this.
Okay. Carla, anything? Betty? Okay. I'll entertain a motion.
Okay.
Let's not argue.
Okay. I move that we authorize staff to go ahead and accept bids to sell the property at the northeast corner of Market Avenue and Pacific Street and 781 Market Street.
Second.
Okay. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. All right. Item B2, this is a resolution to approve a business license application for an arcade in conformance with Morro Bay Municipal Code at 725 Embarcadero Road, which is the Rose's Landing Building. Andrea.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and City Council, excuse me. Pursuant to Morro Bay Municipal Code Section 5.04.330, the application for a business license for an arcade, among other businesses such as a carnival, circus, or pawnbroker, shall be presented to the Chief of Police for his findings and recommendations prior to the issuance of a business license. The application shall then be submitted to the City Council for action before the license is issued. And that's what we're here before you this evening for. The City of Morro Bay received a business license request from Mr. Doug Redican for a Family Fun Arcade to establish a Family Fun Zone video arcade at 725 Embarcadero. Pursuant to the Municipal Code, approval of the business license application for this type of business is required by the City Council in a public hearing format. Commander Tim Olivas conducted a review pursuant to the Muni Code of the business license application, met with Mr. Redican, and toured the proposed location for the arcade. Attached to your staff report was a memorandum provided by the chief of police with a synopsis of the recommended conditions on the business license, and I'll review those briefly. The recommendations, which Mr. Redican has agreed to, include interior lighting within the premises, adequate enough to allow a clean view of the interior of the establishment from the exterior doorway. Second is no furniture shall be placed in the premises that would encourage loitering. Third, the hours of operation shall be limited to from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Fourth, there must be at least one approved manager on location at Rose's Landing who will have the responsibility of supervising the arcade. The approved manager must have their fingerprints and background investigation completed by the police department as required by the Muni Code. And fifth and last condition is a closed-circuit television security camera monitoring the system. Monitoring system will be installed in operation at all times during business hours. The system will consist of a minimum amount of cameras to adequately cover the premises. Tonight we're asking for you to adopt resolution number 5309, which will allow us to process this business license.
Okay, questions? So Rob, did you have something
to add? I just added, in case the public or you're wondering why this is on your agenda, unfortunately it's in our municipal code. It's a very archaic old section that we're on our agenda planning guide to update. When it talks about a penny arcade and the need for a public hearing, you kind of realize how old it really is. So it is one of those, unfortunately, that we couldn't just issue a business license for. It has to come forward to you. It has to be in a public hearing process. And normally a business license of a business that's already an existing building would have required just a business license and wouldn't have went through this process. So we hope in the next year to come back with this. It deals with a lot of those other regulations we've talked about, dealing with tattoo parlors and massage parlors and these type of businesses and getting more up-to-date regulations.
Okay. Any questions for staff?
Yeah, I'm actually curious to know if we can create a special condition that requires an air hockey table. Is that possible?
I certainly mentioned that to Mr. Redican.
Okay, any other questions for Stan?
I have a little more serious question, though I enjoyed that one. I wasn't clear where within the building this is and how many machines were involved. And I'm curious about how the noise level will be separated from the rest of the business and from this area, and how that noise level may or may not affect outside the building.
AGP, can we have the overhead, please?
On this overhead, it shows the location, which Embarcadero is to your left. The Embarcadero gallery is front. The Family Fun Zone is highlighted in pink, and Rose's Grill is in the back. In terms of the noise, I might defer to Chief DeRohan if he or Mr. Olivas discussed that when they discussed the project with Mr. Redican. I don't know the answer.
Good evening, Council. The noise issue, to my recollection, wasn't specifically discussed.
Okay. And do you know how many machines there'll be inside?
I don't know the exact number.
Okay.
If I recall, I think it was 18.
18? Okay. And is this going to take up the whole lower level of the building that's currently there?
No. If you look, it's not the one on the Embarcadero either. It's that little side store that's had a few different shops in there and now is vacant. There's parking right in front of it on that side. Is that Morro Bay Boulevard,
the
side street?
Borders on
so it's
Morro
on the
Boulevard.
Side street, so it's not right on the Embarcadero.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood. Would you give me the address then?
Well, I mean, it's the whole Rose's Landing, and maybe if we can...
It says here it's 725 Embarcadero.
The address is 725 Embarcadero.
But it's between the art gallery and Rose's restaurant downstairs. There used to be a little bakery in there and then a little clothing store, and it's been vacant for quite some time. It's between the art gallery, which fronts on the Embarcadero,
and the water.
The bar, which backs on the bay.
Okay.
Fronts on the bay.
Okay.
Thank you. So it's kind of surrounded by roses.
Okay. And so the businesses around aren't concerned about noise then, or?
I'm sure if and right now they, there hasn't been any, but I'm sure Doug would Doug Radek and the owner of the Roses Landing would have to take care of his subtenants with noise installation or anything else.
That's a subtenant issue.
Yeah.
Well as our understanding that Mr. Redekin will be running, he or his family members will be running the arcade. He's not contracting it out to another organization.
So it's not a sublease.
And he did call me today, too. Mr. Redekin called me today, and he said he already has installed the security cameras. So he's going to be keeping a very close watch on everything, and he's very concerned that this work well with the other tenants, too.
Mm-hmm.
So he's being careful about it, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Other comments, questions?
Yes, I have questions. Along that line, once the permit would be approved, or if it's approved, can the location of that business be moved then once the permit's approved into another section of that building space if other areas of Mr. Redekin's building were to become available? Would he be able to move that without having to come back, like one of the front spaces on the Embarcadero or something?
Not under our current ordinance. Not only would it have to come back to you if it was going to change, it has to come back yearly. Each year you have to review it.
Oh, okay.
So unless we change it over the next year, the way it's currently written, it would have to come back to you if there's a change of location or just a yearly review.
Okay. My second question is, in this it said, Chief Drohan, that it was required that someone on the premises be certified through the police department at all times, fingerprinted, and for security, meaning somebody that could be managing roses from upstairs that's just available or required in the arcade area?
From Roses, what Mr. Redekin was proposing was to have somebody at Roses Landing that could be overseeing the arcade also, not a specific person inside the arcade at all times.
So just a general manager, somebody who would check the security cameras type thing? Okay.
And make walkthroughs.
Okay. So then my only other question or concern, and just for comment, was the one that I had asked earlier, was about how the city revenue in regards to the gross sales, because we lose our sales tax now off of another space, and I recognize that we have no building there, but now I guess we won't have a percentage, or how that was going to translate, and Susan wasn't able to get back because it was late when I asked.
Oh, I apologize. We sent that email, but it was late. This does not generate sales tax, but the revenue that he does generate counts towards his revenue, his percentage of gross. So this will be added on when he pays his percentage of gross. So the general revenue counts. He just will not generate sales tax from this.
Okay.
Thank
any
you.
Other questions? All right. This is a public hearing. Anyone wishing to speak on this issue, please come forward. And seeing no one, we'll bring it back to council. Comments? No? Go ahead.
I'm just, I certainly support the opportunity for Mr. Redekin to have a business and something viable for his welfare, but I'm concerned about, again, another business on the Embarcadero, as we've just made all these exceptions that will not be providing any sales tax in our visitor serving area.
Okay.
My concerns I've expressed in terms of my questions, and I'll be voting for this, and I actually appreciative that we'll be able to review it in a year.
Okay. Well, I think, you know, we often get the complaint there's nothing for kids to do here, and this is something that kids enjoy, so I think it's definitely worth a try. I think that Doug is going to make every effort to make it successful and safe, so I think it's worth giving it a go. All right. Anyone want to make a motion?
I'll go for it. I move that the City Council approve resolution number 5309, approving a business license application for Roses Landing Family Fun Zone Arcade, located at 725 Embarcadero, with the conditions 1 through 5 as listed.
Do I hear a second? I'll second. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay, thank you. All right, well, obviously we don't need a break yet, so let's go on to, let's get our consent agenda done.
Are we doing A1?
Sorry, yeah, that's what I was going to do. Consent agenda, A1, which is strictly minutes.
I move approval of the minutes from the last meeting. Oh, yes, thank you. Yes, I move approval of the minutes from September 14th, 2009.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay. And then we'll move to item C1, and this is continued consideration of the city's co-sponsorship of events, and because I am employed by one of the events that will be affected, I have to step down. So, Betty, we will let you take over. I'm going to eat my phone.
We'll wait till she leaves the room. There she goes. Okay, this is Mr. Woods.
Good evening, Council. Tonight, C1 is a co-sponsorship policy that Council has directed on their August the 10th meeting for the Recreation and Parks Commission, the RPC, for review and to return to you in October, which we are this evening, to review some of their findings. Currently, the city has co-sponsorship of two special events. One is the Morro Bay Winter Bird Festival, and the other is the Teach Foundation Telethon fundraiser. As I said, the RPC did meet on September the 3rd, as well as a continued item until October the 1st, to review and discuss the current co-sponsorship program. I've included the minutes of the 3rd for your review. The RPC agreed that they desire to continue with the co-sponsorship program and have formulated the attached application for council review and consideration. City staff feels that the groups requesting co-sponsorships should meet a minimum of the criteria. And these were discussed at the Recreation and Parks Commission, and staff believes that these three items could be the criteria that's sorted out through the application that's attached there. And that would be the event would be an off-season event, meaning it's going to be held November the 1st through April the 30th. The event would be a multiple day or a one day with financial return to the city. And the third would be a requesting party would be a nonprofit organization. The process for review would be an annual, as well as the resubmittal of the facility use application. Additionally, the current co-sponsored events would most likely need to be reapplied for the co-sponsorship. Some of them are on the books right now, these two events, but if council was to direct us to reestablish that co-sponsorship before the event, we could, or we could let this 2010 pass and go into the next scheduled event. The financial impact for co-sponsoring events varies from event to event, depending size. And I gave you some historical data there from previous staff reports. The one in August outlines those nonprofit groups and some of the prices associated with those. If they were just a regular normal nonprofit rate as opposed to events, a co-sponsored event, which would be a direct cost only. So after quite a bit of conversation, the Recreation and Parks Commission directed staff to come up with some criteria. We formulated a little checklist, came back to them earlier this month, and revised that form to its present state, and that is in your packet. It's a request for consideration for city co-sponsorship is the title, and it goes through various questions, event and contact information, obviously. And other information regarding the event, the description of the event, target audience, will it be advertised in the county, or outside of the county, outside of the state, how will it be advertised, why are you requesting co-sponsorship, what are your expectations, how does the city benefit from your event, what type of vendors, exhibitors, concessionaires, what type of food service, a lot of information to decipher. And then as we go through the checklist, it would be, and the recommendation from the commission is to have department head review and then agendize it for the Recreation and Parks Commission review and then give a recommendation to staff for approval. That's the recommendation from the Recreation and Parks Commission. Regarding your guidelines, that concludes my report, and I would be happy to answer any questions at this time.
Council members. Anyone have a question?
Yeah, Joe, thanks for your time on this. My question is, out of curiosity, do city-sponsored events, are they required to have some sort of recycling plan? I know at times when I've applied, it seemed like that was an official part of the process. Is this an area where we could also highlight that again as an included question or opportunity for them to elaborate just a little more, let them know we really appreciate that component of a special event?
Thank you. It's a good question. Right now, it's not a mandatory condition on a co-sponsorship. It is a condition that is put on public area use permits, and we certainly can extend that recommendation to groups using our facilities. We don't generally put out a history or a list of conditions for the events in the buildings, but we can certainly make the recycling recommendation.
Okay, thank you.
Certainly.
Yeah, Mr. Woods, my question is, when Parks and Recs reviewed this and as I'm reading through it and looked at it, is it just, as I'm seeing it, strictly in regards to facility use and not any of the other equipment and things that organizations use? I know a lot of times we provide things for events and the fees are, there's no fees charged for any of those, so that wasn't factored in here at all.
No, the co-sponsored programs have, they're not exempt from fees. We do charge them direct costs, which is the maintenance and the operation utilities of the facility they're using, as well as some additional staff, direct staff time and costs, the direct costs. If I've got to put in a rental attendant to work this program after hours, I will charge that group. If we have additional cleanup due to this event, there's an additional charge.
What I'm asking about is in regards more to equipment use, like when somebody rents something from the city and they use barricades or this and that, we charge for all those things to be
yes.
placed. So for the nonprofits, the Harbor Festival or the Margarita Festival or those things that are using those from the city, we aren't charging for.
That's incorrect. We do charge
For
direct city services. And post-event, department heads or their representatives direct their invoices to us, and then we compile them and apply that invoice to the applicant. So any additional city services we do look to recoup.
Would you just one more time list for me what a direct cost is?
The direct cost for, say, the Teach Foundation would be all the hours that they're in the facility, and we have a special rate that calculates out the utilities and the maintenance of certain square footage within this community center.
And so I understand utilities would be water, electric, gas.
Correct.
And so maintenance would be
what? We
have
a standard maintenance that's incorporated in that, and that would be based on square footage and the type of amenities within each facility. So if you had to maintain a sink or a counter as opposed to just open, unobstructed carpet area, it's a different rate.
Okay.
So it's based on what's in the room, mm-hmm. how much time per maintenance standards we would allow for a direct cost.
Okay. So ours includes utilities and maintenance, and the maintenance is the facility, not about people's time.
It's the general status of the facility, not including the preparation for the program.
Everything but preparation.
Correct.
Okay. And then is preparation considered a direct cost?
It is, and sometimes it's part of what we contribute to the co-sponsorship. If it's services outside that we really have to go out and bring in somebody special, if I got a guy on duty and he can take in 15 minutes to move a couple of tables and chairs, we incorporate it in that program and we move on.
So that varies, actually.
It varies. So when we say it's case by case, it really is case by case. And it changes year to year. I mean, one year the Teach Foundation won't have any impact on staff on a Friday setup, and then the next time they'll want, 30 to 40 minutes of one of my staff's time. Mm-hmm. So it varies from year to year and from either group.
So the criteria that would be common is whether or not it goes outside of regular time or staff commitment at the time. So anything that's out of the ordinary is billed.
If we can include some staff support throughout the course of our regularly scheduled shift, then we do. If it's outside of that, then it's going to be an extra burden, and then we'll charge the group.
So anything that's outside.
And we work with the groups. I mean, obviously, the Winter Bird Festival, they've been doing it for quite some time, I think maybe 13 years. And there are some things that they do go in earlier than staff is there. And there is a lot of give and take with the group.
Okay. So are those the two items that are considered direct costs then? The hours, which includes utilities and maintenance, and then anything that's outside normal hours?
Correct.
And that's it. This is a public meeting. Does anyone in the audience have a question or comment they'd like to make about?
It's not.
It's a C2 item. Pardon me. C1. Okay. So, sorry. Okay. Comments then.
My only comment. I think I really appreciated how the Rec and Parks Commission and the department has worked this through for us and given us some good recommendations. I'm inclined to go for option 2 with the criteria that was submitted by the R&P Commission, and I would like to include some sort of acknowledgement of a recycling plan on the questionnaire. I'm not necessarily saying it has to be a requirement, but I'd like the applicant to at least be able to display their thoughts on it. It may be really challenging in some cases, but for them to elaborate. Pardon?
It'll allow us to track it some, too, over the years.
Yes.
My feelings about this is real mixed. Not that I don't want to do it, but the two items that we sponsor right now are very different. And I don't see the uniformness of what we're offering, and I guess that's what I'm looking for if we're developing a policy here. And so I guess I want to talk about that. Does it need to have some kind of uniformity or not? If we're doing it strictly to enhance bringing in events, and that's a special event, or are we doing it for the benefit of the school or for the city residents? I guess I need a definition of what a special event is, and not from. I mean, the staff may have one. I don't know if we have one.
Well, I think that's why, our Parks and Recs Commission is made up of our local residents, and I'm willing to go with the idea of what they have because I know many of them have youth in our schools or have had. And I think that I agree with what you're saying because the Teach Foundation is extremely different from the Winter Bird Festival.
Yeah.
But we've also been co-sponsoring these events for both those two events for over 10 years. Mm-hmm. So I think it's time, as stated in the staff report, to bring them back and reevaluate them and let them reapply to see if they fit some of the criteria.
But how do we know what criteria we're going to gauge them against? I mean, is it just these three? You have to do it in the off season. There's a time limit that you have to come in for multiple days. And then are you a nonprofit? So it's kind of, for me, it's like inviting groups that are trying to do events that are weekend events. And it doesn't really address the Teach situation. And maybe we shouldn't be sponsoring the Teach situation. Or do we want to do that? And so I how do we put that together?
But I think on here it says or one-day events, and this is about a co-sponsorship, so those organizations are still going to be eligible for our nonprofit rates, which are still reduced, just not to that extent. So, I mean, at some point we have to recoup what the costs are, too.
Well, exactly.
The same as the school district does.
Right. And so I guess maybe that's where I'm having my difficulty. You're already a nonprofit, so you're already getting a reduced rate. And if we co-sponsor you, then you get another reduced rate. And how does that benefit the city? I don't get that.
By being an event that brings people into the community to stay for an event over the weekend, you have your TOT and sales tax generated from the event.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a benefit to that.
And on the other hand, if it's something that's benefiting a community-based organization or effort, then that's obvious benefit for the residents itself. I think that's kind of the interesting contrast between the two events that we currently have. And I think it's at this point, what I understand from Mr. Woods is we're leaving it open to evaluation from the Rec and Parks Commission, from Mr. Woods himself or the director in his position, and then ultimately, if there's a discrepancy between their decision on an application, it would come back to the council. And so I think between that commission and the director, there's probably going to be some really good evaluation and analysis about, does this qualify? Is this something that we as a community really want to support? Is it going to benefit us in a really obvious way? And if there is some discrepancy there, then it would come back to us. I don't really see that happening as often as it might seem, but overall, I think it's important for us to have a mechanism for the department to really perhaps kick in for an exciting idea or a continuing idea and support these events as they're developed or continue to be programmed.
So what I hear, there's really two kinds of special events. One's a community-based organization, which may or may not be nonprofit, or this is saying it has to be nonprofit. So what I'm reflecting back on now is the Dahlia Days. That's a community-based event. It wasn't necessarily an organization, except it's the Garden Club. So I guess there is. And so how does that fit into the decision we made about them is what I'm trying to figure out. Why teach? Why not Dahlia Days? So what is it that we need to say to the community so they know whether or not they'll be turned down before they get here? And so that's kind of where I'm coming from.
Maybe we can ask Mr. Woods for clarification on that.
But actually, I'm going to jump in real quickly since I was here at the very beginning of co-sponsorships, and I think the concept behind the co-sponsorship of events in the a number of years ago, and actually the Morro Bay Jazz Festival was a co-sponsorship as well, was the idea that it would give fledgling events a little bit of a foot up in Morro Bay to be able to become established. And what ended up happening is these events went from year to year continuing to be co-sponsored, perhaps whether or not they needed it or not. So I think what Mr. Woods has done is brought back some policy that will allow events to apply on a regular basis. It might be interesting, and I didn't see it here, perhaps it's in the application of some sort of their budget. And so there's an evaluation each year and whether or not the event needs to be co-sponsored each year. The beauty of co-sponsoring is to get it going. Hopefully, after a co-sponsorship of maybe 1 year or 2 years, the event is on its feet and can take care of itself.
So, would we build that into our policy that we are that this would be a, like you just stated, a way to get fledgling events to go, and that they will be let go of at some point?
You could certainly do that. You might not want to limit it only to fledgling events, but certainly that was the thought at the very beginning a number of mm-hmm. years ago. And then, again, those co-sponsorship agreements just continued. Mm-hmm. But certainly I think some sort of co-sponsorship is worthwhile, mm-hmm. But the fact that you're even considering looking at it yearly is also a very good point, because it will give – or the department will look at it yearly to see whether or not that event needs to be continued to be co-sponsored.
Yeah, and I get that, and I think that's really valuable and important to look at it annually, but it seems like there should be some goal in mind with that. I mean, are we evaluating it just to evaluate it, and so automatically it just gets approved every year because we've done it last year? You know, at what point do we try to encourage them to let go, I guess?
May I interrupt for a moment, please? I do have a response. I think that's why the criteria on the questionnaire, there isn't just three questions. There's more than three questions on here. And maybe the first criteria is that it's off-season, it's nonprofit, it's multiple days. But then maybe as they come into review is, hey, maybe the benefit to the city has changed. Maybe the group's expectations have changed. And as we go through this, going, you know what, there's really no need for us to continue a co-sponsorship. So that, I think that those kind of questions kind mm-hmm. of get answered through the review process. And I think that you wouldn't accept a canned response and that things do change. And I would hope that through their program evaluation, they would recommend change to their own programs. So I think through their own changing of the program and that whole program's life cycle, you'll see the answers change to the questions that we have on the criteria, and then you can base your decisions on the annual basis if, in fact, you wanted to come up and bring those back up to council or leave them at the department level.
Mm-hmm. See, my only other reference is the Winter Bird Festival, and I don't see that change happening. I see that as one of those automatic things that happen because it's such a well-done event. It's very popular. They depend on this discount that they get from us in order to make it more reasonable for people to attend. And so, you know, at what point would we cut them off or not? You know, I think that's what I'm looking for. Or maybe we won't ever do that. And so I feel like we're making policy, and the questionnaire has the policy questions listed in there, but there's no policy to go with the application to give guidance to Rec and Park on what they're going to be looking at annually.
But I think, Ms. Winholtz, as we move forward with this, we're already stepping up from where we were before because we never even evaluated or did this process. So we're already changing it in the sense that they're going to come each year and have this as a guideline. So I want to put some faith in the commission and the director that they'll evaluate them on a realistic basis and determine whether or not we should continue with the co-sponsorship, not just based on the funding, but all the criteria as you've expressed. And I think that's their goal as well as ours. But I think this is a huge step from where we've been.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll change each one of these organizations and how they approach the city and have to justify whether or not we do continue to support them. So
yeah, and I hear that, and I it's not about faith in our people or in staff, but it's more about a criteria that people can depend on, that they know what they're being looked at for, and so they'll know how to address that. And I don't see that consistency there, unless it's just these three things. And if it's going to be these three things, I feel like November 1st is too late. I think that needs to be earlier. And that's just me. And so I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up because I actually did think the same about the November 1st date. It seemed like October would be good. And to follow up on your comments, I think this is perhaps somewhat of a moving target, and we'll be able to get some more feedback from the Rec and Parks Commission to help define some of this criteria more and better communicate what it is that we're looking for, because I definitely hear your concern there, and I think it's important that we do that.
Mm-hmm. So,
are you ready for a motion?
I guess we are.
I'll move that we continue to co-sponsor events based on option 2 as listed in the staff report for the city to continue co-sponsoring events.
And the three criteria that we're talking about is off-season, and you want to leave it at November 1st?
To include, yes, I do actually want to leave it at November 1st for now.
And that has to be multi-day?
It says multi-day or one day with benefit return to the city, and the third is requesting party as a nonprofit organization.
Yeah. And here's another criteria I guess I'd like Parks and Rec to define is what is financial return to the city, and how will that be defined?
Do you want to second the motion? So
because, we need a second. You're right.
I'll second for discussion.
Okay, because I don't know. A teach school certainly doesn't give us back any financial return, nor is it multi-day. So right away, it's not going to meet criteria number 2.
It's a one-day event, and it's a nonprofit, and that's listed on number 2 and number 3.
Okay. So does the event not have to meet all three criteria, just some of the, maybe one of the three?
It says consisting of the following. Mr. Woods, does it need to meet all three? Could you address it?
We did include all three, and I think that when you look at the Teach Foundation, I'm under the impression that the fundraising is for the Teach Foundation to give away dollars, cash, to local teachers, and that includes the teachers at the district within the city of Morro Bay. So I think that was back when they agreed to do a co-sponsorship, that was part of the equation, that there was a financial benefit, and it wasn't directly to the city, but to our students and the teachers that are in our schools. So I think that would be the economic or the financial benefit from from the Teach Foundation, and the other from the Bird Festival would be just the indirect impact that mm-hmm. they have for the multiple days. So,
that one's a little bit more obvious.
Yeah, it's a little more obvious there. But like I said, I haven't tracked their contributions throughout the teachers in our community, but I'm sure they would make that available if we requested it.
Mm-hmm. Any more discussion?
Yes, Mr. Woods, as far as with this questionnaire or the request for co-sponsorship, the ideas of including a question about a recycling plan concept and the budget, we don't need those to be officially part of our motion. Are you comfortable inserting that sort of language in the questionnaire?
We certainly are.
Okay.
Thank you.
As long as the rest of the council is.
That's fine for me. After we pass this, I think I would like to maybe make a second motion encouraging Reckon Park to come back with some more obvious criteria, obvious meaning answering some of the questions that I've raised, if that's okay. I think that I'd like to go beyond where we are right now as the first step and then have them pursue that a little further. Mr. Woods, would you want to say something?
Because there was a motion and a second, that could certainly be a separate motion, but we're starting to get into that running motions where we've had a little trouble lately.
Okay.
So if we've got the motion, if the clerk wants to read that back, and if you want to make any amendments to it or do a second motion.
Rather than do a second motion, I would amend this motion?
Okay. If you could repeat the motion then for the clerk.
Okay. So the original motion is option number 2 on the page. With no changes, is that right? Okay. And then I'd like to make a friendly motion that we ask Reckon Park to also explore this criteria further with more delineation.
Yes, I'll support that.
Is that clear that we wanted to start with the 3 criteria that is laid out.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we did.
Okay.
You'll second.
And I'm comfortable with that. Yeah.
Okay. Okay then. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. Thank you. Okay, for what it's worth, I did hear a comment about what does the Bird Festival bring. We have about 500 participants every year, and at least 300 of them are from out of town. So we bring in that many people for 2 or 3 nights, eating and sleeping and buying things in our stores and all that. Just for the record. Okay. Item C2, mandatory water conservation requirements. I guess Dylan's going to do this.
Yeah, good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the council. I didn't bring a staff report tonight. I actually just wanted to sort of hit highlights and then throw some dates out there. So where we're at is we actually, starting October 19th of this year, so coming up in a little more than a week, we will be beginning mandatory water conservation measures. In your mailbox later this week, it should go out tomorrow in the mail. You'll see them probably Wednesday or Thursday, a flyer with those mandatory conservation measures outlined. For tonight, I just wanted to hit the highlights and the things that are going to be most impacting to the residents of the community. First and foremost, any kind of outdoor use, washing down a car, a sidewalk, a boat, will be prohibited. So you can wash your car, you have to use a bucket, can't use the hose. Washing and cleaning the sidewalk, you can't hose down the sidewalk. Those will be prohibited. The other probably most impactful thing for the average homeowner out there is that irrigation will be restricted. Even numbered addresses can only irrigate on Wednesdays and Sundays. Odd numbered addresses on Tuesdays and Saturdays. So those are a couple of highlights that I wanted to hit. There again, the dates, this will start October 19th. You'll be getting a flyer in the mail this week outlining those specific measures. The steps that the city will take is we actually will be enforcing these measures. So if we catch somebody out there washing, we'll give them a warning, and then we'll follow up with either citation or shutting off their water service. So this is something the city's taking very seriously, and we'll act fairly quickly to prevent waste of water during this time period. So this is starting October 19th, and these mandatory measures go into effect at that point. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Any questions for staff?
Yes, I have one. Who's going to be out doing the enforcement watching?
We've been arm wrestling over that in the office. Actually, we sort of felt that this will be a multi-pronged approach. Largely, though, our building department will be handling that function and that they're out and about in the community in that sort of a role already.
Thank you. My second question is, how do you legally shut someone's water service off to their home if you're, I mean, how can you discontinue their drinking water?
Because our code allows us to is the short answer to that. There's a process in place that you go, if somebody's found wasting water, they will receive a notice. We're not going to shut somebody's water off the first time. They'll get a notice from us, probably a verbal warning first. Then if the problem continues, they will receive a written warning. Based on their response to that written warning or lack of response, then their water service could be shut off. And that's mostly as a measure basically to get people's attention. It's to make sure that the problem gets remedied before the water will go back on.
Any other questions? Okay. Comments? I'm going to start with a comment. Again, I don't know if we can put this up or whatever. It's really important that people be aware of this. It is going to be enforced, and there are going to be some people surprised. And I remember when Melody DeMeritt was on the council, and she said that she was nervous about approaching somebody that she saw washing down her driveway during a conservation time. And actually, the person just didn't know. They were from out of town, and they were at a guest house, and so they didn't understand that they weren't supposed to do that. So I would ask all of you as citizens, if you see your neighbor doing one of these things that's restricted, just let them know. They may not be aware. They may not have read it. I know it's hard when you get these inserts in your bills and stuff. You don't always pay attention. Sometimes it just goes straight into the wastebasket. So we have to spread the word because it is very serious this year. There is a definite water shortage, and we have to deal with it. So please spread the word to all your neighbors. Everybody watching out there, be aware of it, tell your friends, talk about it, and be very, careful. Okay, other comments?
I did want to update the council. We had talked a bit about a gray water workshop working with Slow Green Build, and I've been working with Mr. Dan Doris about a date for that and Slow Green Build as well, and we've identified November 10th as our date for that event. It's going to be an evening event here. We're kind of working on the details of that with Mr. Woods. I'm not going to say that's totally confirmed at this point. One of the things that we're planning on including with information about gray water reuse is an opportunity for outreach about water conservation, the state water shutdown that will be within the period of the state water shutdown, and hopefully just a community outreach opportunity for our departments, and also to get in touch with the professional, the professional contractor and so on that we have quite a few of here in Morro Bay. One of the challenges right now is developing the $750 funds that will be asked from Slow Green Build to help cover the cost of the gray water manuals and their organization of the event itself. I'm committed to providing as much discretionary funds that I have remaining as is necessary. We're talking about the concept of inviting some local contractors to be sponsors of the event. Mr. Doris seems comfortable with that, and I am as well. We're going to be asking for a very modest $50 to $100 donation to allow that contractor to set up some information about what they might be able to do along the lines of water conservation, so it could almost be somewhat of a trade show for our local professionals. And I guess I'd like to now just let you know that I may ask each one of you for some sort of a contribution out of your discretionary funds to help cover the cost and make sure that we can pull off this workshop and work together with the groups that are involved. So just wanted to update you on that.
Do we still have discretionary money?
Thanks to
Barry Ross.
Yes, that's right.
Yes, Morro Bay Furniture donated our discretionary funds.
And I should say, Soil Greenbelt is also working to contact the Los Osos, Cayucas, Cambria, to find out if they would like to come in with us and promote this as a North Coast event and perhaps kick in some funding as well. Soil Greenbelt is going to handle the majority of the promotion for the event, as the concept is right now. We'll be confirming everything through Mr. Woods this week.
Okay. Any other comments? Alrighty, then that's informational. Everybody be aware. Starts on the 19th. Item D2.
This do we need a motion to accept? And
I'm sorry.
Do we need to do this or not?
Oh, okay. Receive and file the report.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Go ahead.
Then I would move that we receive the Mr. Wade's report and file it.
Okay.
Second.
All in favor? Aye. Opposed? None. Okay. Item D1. This is a report on the alcohol beverage control license modification request by the Bowie Bar. And Chief DeRohan.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Good evening again, Council. Before I give my actual staff report, I'd like to respond just to a few of the comments that were made during public comment, just to clarify some information if I could. One of the comments was that the Morro Bay Police Department requested the 12 restrictions. Actually, most of the restrictions, I believe 9 of them, have been in existence at the Bowie Bar for years with actually the previous owners. Only 3 additional conditions were discussed, and that was discussed in a meeting with the Rosarios at the time of the purchase of the bar between ABC, the Rosarios, and myself, and they were actually mutually agreed to by the Rosarios at the time they purchased the bar. There was a comment made that no other bar has these restrictions. Actually, in initial conversations with the ABC back when the Rosarios purchased the bar, they said that many of these conditions are common to other bars in the county. However, there were specific conditions to the Bowie Bar because it was located in a residential neighborhood, which ABC said makes it somewhat unique. There was actually a comment that said city staff insist that we have all these restrictions. I was a little bit surprised to hear this because actually, somewhat quite to the contrary, we've tried to work out a compromise to appeal to all the concerned residents to recommend to the ABC board. And finally, there was another comment made that the staff report is misleading, using 9 reported calls against the bar. And actually, to the contrary, I think there was a little misinterpretation of the information, and I apologize to the bar owners if that was confusing, but that was indicated in the staff report to actually show, and it was mentioned in the staff report, that there was a significant reduction in calls for service during the last year as compared to the previous year under the previous owners. And it was indicated that, in fact, the bar did report 6 of those calls, which is good. And there was only 1 call that was received regarding a noise complaint by one of the neighbors, again, as compared to numerous calls in the past. So that information was actually listed in the report to show that there was actually a reduction in calls for service not to be used against the bar. As far as my staff report, there's a lot of information that is contained, and so just for the public benefit, I'll try to keep it as brief as I can. But the owners of the Bowie Bar, Brian Rosario and Nancy Nagano, have filed a petition with the Alcoholic Beverage Control to modify 3 conditions to their current ABC license. They purchased the bar in August of 2008. Due to the previous problems with the bar, including a suspension of the ABC license and complaints from the neighbors in the past, additional conditions were placed on the ABC license by the ABC board when the Rosarios purchased it. These included, the first one was sales consumption of alcohol will be permitted between 6 a.m. and 1 a.m. each day. The previous conditions allowed sales and consumption until 2 a.m. The Rosarios are requesting that this condition be modified to allow the sales and consumption back to 2 a.m. each day, as it was with the previous owners. The second condition was that dancing is prohibited on the premises at any time. There's been no discussion about this or any request to modify this additional condition. And the third one was that the bar must provide at least one uniform licensed security guard between the hours of 9 p.m. and closing each day of the week. The Rosarios are requesting to eliminate this condition altogether and not have to provide any uniform licensed security guards. A condition which now exists and existed in the past with the previous owners prohibits live entertainment at the bar. The Rosarios are requesting this condition be modified to allow live entertainment consisting just of acoustic instruments only, and that the music will be stopped by 9 p.m. And those also mentioned that they would ensure that it wouldn't be any louder than the current jukebox in there. Myself and members of the city staff have met with the Rosarios regarding their requests. They informed us that they are making these requests, as they stated tonight, primarily because the previously mentioned conditions are financially burdensome on their business. I also received some written correspondence from the neighboring residences of the bar, many who support the Rosarios' requests and some who don't and want to keep the existing ABC conditions in effect. With opposing views of the neighbors, I met with Mr. Rosario on July 22nd to discuss a possible compromise with the ABC conditions that ABC might consider. The first one was regarding condition number one. Mr. Rosario stated that his busiest days were Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights. The compromise that we discussed to present to ABC was to allow the bar to be open until 2 a.m. on those three nights and continue to close at 1 a.m. Sunday through Wednesday. Regarding condition number two, there was no objection to this request to allow acoustic instruments such as acoustic guitars and no percussion, no louder than the current jukebox. There's also an existing condition that says no music can be audible beyond the premises, the bar anyway, and that condition was there in the past. And that the live entertainment would be stopped by 9 p.m. The third, regarding condition number five, the compromise would be to require a uniform licensed security guard on Thursday and Friday and Saturday nights, the busiest nights, and eliminate this requirement for the security Sunday through Wednesday nights. At the time of our meeting, Mr. Rosario believed the compromises would work. However, I received a phone call the following day from him stating that these compromises won't work for him. So the police department has seen a reduction in calls for service at the Bowie Bar since the Rosarios took over. We did have one major incident recently where Mr. Rosario was injured by a patron leaving the bar and the suspect was arrested, and that was an isolated incident. As stated by the Rosario's attorney, the bar employees have been good at calling for assistance from the police department and reporting problems, and we compliment them for this. The ABC sent council a letter informing you of the Rosario's request to modify the previously mentioned conditions to their ABC license and informing you that you had 30 days to respond to file a written objection. You've been provided with the staff report, copy of the ABC letter, copy of the Rosario's letter to ABC requesting license modifications, and copy of the existing ABC license conditions. Staff recommends that you discuss this matter and provide your recommendations that will be forwarded to ABC. And I also want to make it clear that your recommendations are just recommendations. The ABC conducts their own investigation. I'm sure they will take into consideration, you know, your discussion. And they are the determining authority on any modifications to the ABC license. And that concludes my report.
Okay. Any questions for the chief? No?
Yes, I just wanted to confirm that the conditions 1, 3, and 5, the ones that are the focus of our conversation tonight, those are part of the special conditions that ABC installed, and those are not touching the original 9 that you mentioned have been associated with the bar since its use as far back as we know.
That's correct. I believe it's 1, 2, and 5.
1, 2, and 5, okay. Great. So we, at this point, we would be continuing forward if we were to adjust these three on the table. We'd be continuing forward with the baseline conditions as this bar has been saddled with since its history.
Yeah, Mr. Rosario is only requesting modifications to those three conditions.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Comments? Let's start. Ready?
Oh, I thought Mr. Smuckler might, since it's his neighborhood.
Okay.
Well, my comments really, I guess I'll just say that I'm in support of the alternate motion number one, where we actually modify the requests, or we communicate our recommendation to the ABC board with these modifications. I think it's been clear living in the neighborhood and talking to regulars at the bar from all different demographic backgrounds that there's been a very significant and obvious change in the management style and the responsibility level of the new owners. And I've picked that up from people across the board, and I think our comments tonight were very clear about that from different neighbors that are right next door to the business. I'm concerned because talking with the owner and seeing the flow there, it is a small neighborhood bar. The conditions that we have them as they currently are, I don't think are sustainable for the business. Really, I don't see that business being able to continue to operate with what we have existing. And because of the last year and the quality of business that we're seeing there, I'm comfortable removing those restrictions, or at least recommending to the ABC board that we remove those.
So what you're favoring is alternate motion one, that we file a written objection to their request.
Yes, and actually I am considering, I'll be interested to hear what the rest of the council thinks, but I would suggest that we send a letter saying so, and that we recommend the support of these adjustments to the ABC board so they're aware that we think the owners have done an exemplary job of turning this business around.
All right, Carla?
Well, I am in 100% agreement with Councilmember Smuckler and his comments. I have first time for everything. Now, first Rick, now you. I appreciate the efforts that they've put forth, and I know when you have constraints put on your business, especially that you didn't create but inherited, it makes it very difficult, especially the first year in business. And I'm glad that they're still here, able to ask for support in having these conditions removed, and I certainly look forward to being able to help support that opportunity to tell the ABC that we would like to see them have this same playing field as the other bars in town.
Okay, Betty?
That's fine for me.
Okay. I'm going to say something else, and I know it wasn't asked for, but I think they've done an example. Okay. Could we ask Mr. Rosario to come forward and respond to that?
Certainly, he could quit earlier if he wanted to. But I have to tell.
Yeah, make you stay open late. But would you like that option?
We want to dance.
I just wanted to be a good business relation with the neighbors. So I thought, I want longer. But you know, if neighbor complain, I can close it early or. If it is possible, I will. If I can do it in the weekend,
right,
a little bit longer, that would be
Friday and Saturday or
grateful,
something.
Grateful. Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks
you.
A lot.
Madam Mayor, I had the same response that you did when I first read it. It was like, whoa, how can you end music earlier? Particularly,
that's when it starts usually.
If it doesn't go outside at the building and stays at the same level, and I think that's what can be monitored is the noise level. So I agree with you.
Okay, well, how about we modify that second condition to end by 11 p.m. on Friday and Saturday?
Well, are you going to limit it to just Friday and Saturday? Because you're going to end up with, what about New Year's or holidays that don't fall on weekends and things?
I don't know that we need to put, can we just eliminate the last sentence?
Just have it. Okay. Just no
if it has to stay within the confines anyway.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, that's fine with me.
Okay.
Okay. All right, so then if we were not objecting to the restrictions except for this one, we want to take off the time limit. So how would we phrase that motion? I mean, that we do want to respond and change that
file
one.
Your motion would be the same as file no written objection and file a letter of support removing the three conditions that the bar owner has asked for.
Plus this additional time, removing this one sentence.
Correct. And I don't see that in the letter that the owner, and maybe he can clarify, is August 17, 2009, he's asking for the removal of condition number two. It doesn't have anything about limiting time limits, so I'm not sure where that time limit came from.
Okay.
Then I'll make a motion for you. For us, if that's all right, that I would move that the City Council file a letter of support for the Buoy Bar's request, and with items 1, 2, and 3 as listed, with the elimination of the sentence, music would end by 9 p.m.
Okay. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. Congratulations. Okay. Do we need a break, or you want to keep soldiering on? All right, we'll take a short break. Okay, we're back, and we're going to handle item D2. This is approval of a resolution approving the application for grant funds for the per capita grant program under the California Clean Water, Clean Air, Safe Neighborhoods, and Coastal Protection Act, boy, that's a mouthful, of 2002 for improvements to Lila Kaiser Park. Joe.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. The title is long. I was trying to take over, you know, Rob's job there with the longest one.
The longest title, right.
No, in 2002, the city of Morro Bay received some monies. It's 2002 Bond Act, Proposition 40, per capita block grant. The minimum amount was $220,000 for the program. The city spent the first portion out of Del Mar at the playground, and we have a remaining balance of $70,000. As you can tell by the letter that I attached from the Office of Grants and Local Services, they want us to act on this unallocated funds and declare a project and spend the money, and we're excited to do that. But in order for us to do that, we needed two things. One, your approval, and two, a project. So staff recently met with the tree committee, and they're looking to do this Arbor Day tree planting at Lila Kaiser, and we're working very diligent with them for a nice design. So as we're out there, we're looking at Lila Kaiser and thinking we could do a few more things. One is to replace the bleachers that have been listed in your risk management. Is it a risk management study I think we have that indicates that those bleachers are non-compliant and need to be upgraded? So we take a factor like that. We can eliminate that and replace the bleachers. We would do that. So really, what else can we do there? And so we asked ourselves, and the bleachers was one thing, adding some foul poles to both fields, portable pitching mound, scoreboard, thatch, a vacuum, something we can pull behind, and when we irrigate, when we thatch out the lawns, we can pick it up with this vacuum. That's an attachment. Outdoor enclosed two-sided message board. The foam. That completes my report. Be happy to answer questions at this time.
Okay, questions?
Actually, Joe, Ms. Borchardt just mentioned the barbecue pit. I can't see that list, and I don't remember seeing it. Is that
barbecue pit is not on the list. That's something that we could certainly address. Right now, it's just some things that we are looking at. Overall park, we can address that another time, but maybe not part of this project.
Yeah, we had a conversation earlier because, you know, it is a really nice position to be in to have some additional money to play with, and I think this project is worthwhile, and Mr. Woods certainly does. One of my thoughts was, at the same time, we're kind of in a penny-pinching mode, which is important. It's appropriate for the times that we're in. And I asked Mr. Woods if it would be possible to potentially use some of these funds if we wanted to go through with this pool study that's on our next item agenda. And it doesn't appear to be possible. So at this point, I'm thinking along the lines of, well, I'm getting in my comments, so perhaps I'll just leave it there.
I have a question.
Okay, Betty.
Did you consider the tennis courts that need to go in at Del Mar, or are they already fully funded?
Thank you. It's a good question. The tennis courts are fully funded. The funds are just frozen. So through the same organization, Office of Grants and Local Services, once we get that money freed up, then we'll be going out to bid and we're putting in some tennis courts. So that money is separate money, separate, and this was back in 2002. So.
But my other project that I thought about was the mitigation that's needed for the Harbor Walk. And I know that we don't have any money for the mitigation. And so I didn't know if this would be a source for that.
That particular project I'm unaware of, so I don't feel comfortable with responding to that.
And I don't know how that would fall, Mr. Schultz, since it's from a different source of granting.
Yeah, and I'm not sure because that was more mitigation and rehabilitation of that area. I mean, we keep people out of the area as opposed to park improvement, so I'm not sure. I'd have to agree with Joe. We'd have to research it further to know if that could be used for the actual mitigation of that area that was part of the Harbor Walk.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I could interject, our first whereas is certainly a funds for the acquisition and development of neighborhood, community, and regional parks and recreational lands and facilities.
Well, certainly the Harbor Walk's a regional area.
Is the area that we're mitigating part of that?
I'm fairly familiar with the guidelines for this bond. I was responsible for dealing with it initially, and it was my recollection when we dealt with it that it's got to be used for a thing, a project, something that people can use, an enhancement to a park. Mm-hmm. We had bond money before this, about $170,000 that was used for some field improvements at Kaiser Park. So there's some pretty strict bond guidelines that we need to adhere to. I'm doubtful if it would be able to be used for mitigation.
Okay. Then my last one would be, I'm curious about Mr. Smuckler's question, why this pool feasibility is not eligible since it is a thing.
Do you say not eligible?
That's what I thought I heard him say.
It's not the acquisition of any parkland or facility, and it's not the development.
So it's not for a study. It has to be for a thing.
Right.
Okay, I got that. And then did you think about the dog park at all, that they might need money or?
No, I did not.
Okay.
Our agreement with the Morro Bay Pups is that they are financially taking care of all the improvements regarding the off-leash dog area, and so far it's been very successful. I'm hoping that we can get through some of the last little details of their entranceway and we can move forward. But that is strictly funded by a community interest group.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
Any other questions? Okay. Comments? Noah?
My comment would be I'm comfortable with this. I have a concern that we have a pretty hefty list up there, and Mr. Woods acknowledges that. I think I'd like to make sure that we don't go beyond this the grant funds that are available, if that's possible. I'm willing to support this concept, but I'd like to make sure that we realize that we're not going to spend over the grant funds and get into other funds that would be not prepared for that sort of expense.
Okay, Carla?
Well, he certainly welcomed the opportunity to have some a scoreboard down there, which will be great, as many years as I've spent down there, Little League games and new bleachers. It's unfortunate we can't include doing some upgrading to the barbecue area because it is one of our largest facility spaces for outdoor barbecuing other than the vets hall, but that includes when people rent the baseball fields and barbecue both. So it's falling in disrepair too. So hopefully somewhere along the line.
I'd like to make sure the other parks aren't neglected, and they haven't been. We've done upgrades with the children's toys at Monty Young and at Del Mar, and Cloisters, I think we've done a little bit there, or will be needing some. I know there was a little talk about that a year ago, and maybe that got done. So I guess this is the project, and okay.
Well, I think that the extent of the use at this park especially warrants this. I think it's a good way to use the funds, so I'm in favor of it. Anybody want to do a motion?
Just to confirm, what do the rest of the council think about a not-to-exceed type of a clause?
Absolutely. Sure.
Okay. I will make a motion then that we approve the acceptance of Resolution 5209 and authorize the Rec and Parks Department to utilize these funds as proposed for Lila Kaiser Park in a not-to-exceed capacity of those grant funds.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. All right.
Moving on to item D3, this is a recommendation for use of park in lieu funds to contribute to the completion of an aquatic center feasibility study sponsored by the community group The Pool at Morro Bay. Joe, you're on again. This is your meeting tonight.
Thank you, Your Honor. Honorable Mayor and Council. Yeah, I figured I'd just put them all in one, you know, spend the night with you. This item regarding a pool and community pool has been obviously talked about for a long time, ever since the closure of the high school pool. And council had directed city staff to meet with community partners and reestablish and develop a community pool. So we did that, and we met with the district and the county. Recently, the Morro Bay Community Pool was formed, Pool Foundation, pardon me, and they asked the stakeholders to come together because the three of us weren't really going anywhere. We didn't have the resources to get into what it takes to initiate an aquatics center. And so it kind of took the backstage, and as the Community Pool Foundation came up, they were the catalyst in which the three organizations could say, yes, we want to support you. Go out, fundraise, do a feasibility study, come back, and tell us where we're at.
I'm sorry, could you just clarify the three organizations you're referring to?
That would be the City of Morro Bay, the County of San Luis Obispo, and the San Luis Obispo District School District. And so we met, and we did a strategy meeting, and we figured out where we're going to go, and we started to develop a very loose-knit MOU between the four organizations, and also directed the foundation to do the feasibility study to raise money and to do the feasibility study. And so they went out and did that. Well, they did more than that. They gathered more members, and then internally they had, I think, a separating. They both split up. There's two groups. One's Morro Bay Community Pool Foundation, and the other is the Pool at Morro Bay Foundation. And all the details in which why they split, I'm not privy to. But I know the direction is we haven't lost sight. We're still on the path to get a feasibility study for the stakeholders so we know do we need to proceed or not. The community, Morro Bay Community Pool Foundation, had mentioned earlier that they split and now they're not doing anything, and staff was certainly not implying that. Just shortly after that comment, I make reference to what they are doing, which is supporting the existing swimming opportunities, and they're trying to partner up with the existing pool operations. They were their president, Karen Robert, came and spoke to the Recreation Parks Commission October the 1st, and the month prior, in September, Terry Banco came as the president of the Pool at Morro Bay Foundation and gave a presentation to the Recreation and Parks Commission. Both groups have the similar interest in swimming, but how we get there and what we're doing right now is a little bit different. So this particular request is $15,000 for the feasibility study, and it is the second phase of the feasibility study. Pardon me. The Recreation and Parks Commission, that's their recommendation, is to fund $15,000 to the phase two of the Morro Bay Community Pool feasibility study. And the first phase will be a phone survey, and that's outlined because in our resolution it's for the Morro Bay, Los Osos, and Cayucas communities. And I think that the foundation is looking at the North Coast, which would include all the way up into Cambria. So I'm looking, I'm thinking that this is my interpretation of the limited in scope, because there are other issues on the feasibility study don't limit it to a place or a size. So this phase one goes through, and then after the results of phase one come through, which is fully funded by the Pool at Morro Bay Foundation and the Los Osos Pool Group, after the results come back, the stakeholders will get back together, we'll review and analyze the results of the first phase of the feasibility study, and then we'll determine if we need to continue. If the feasibility says there's no way this is going to work, then obviously the diligence was due and we're finished. we're back to square one. You still have a pool. But if it goes in and says this is very feasible, you need to go into phase two. That's when the $15,000 of tonight's request would come into play, and it would be for phase two, which is the design of the aquatic center that would be happening in Morro Bay. Not for a center that would be outside of the city limits. So, staff is recommending that you approve $15,000 from the park and lieu funds to support the phase two of the pool feasibility study that is being sponsored by a nonprofit organization, the Pool at Morro Bay Foundation. And I'll add one more thing before I close, that there is a letter from the Morro Bay Community Pool Foundation, Karen Robert, in support of having the Pool at Morro Bay Foundation do this feasibility study. I think that was very important. The staff received that information in writing from the foundation saying that our resolution, I believe it's 7708, I believe, that says that we've been working with the Morro Bay Community Pool Foundation, and this is not that exact foundation, but we're still doing the feasibility study. Stakeholders haven't changed. We're actually just a little further down the road. The criteria in which have been requested by the foundation that the city look at, something that we're already have in place. We're already going to approve the criteria. We won't do it because we're the biggest stakeholder. We'll do it as an equal partnership with the district and the county. And I think that's fair to the partnership going in, and I think we need to hold true to that. So without anything else being said, I would turn it back to council. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to ask a question, and I don't think you answered this one, but it looks like the Los Osos has contributed some funds. Both groups have contributed, and they're asking for us to contribute. But then you talk about a feasibility study that's going to include Cayucas and perhaps Cambria up to San Simeon. Is there going to be contribution from those areas? I can't see those areas other than Cayucas being reachable for our residents if it's going to be someplace else.
That's a good question, and I think that what we're looking at in phase one, it is going to include San Simeon down to Highway 1, which includes the northwesterly part of San Luis Obispo. I think you want that range to see if maybe there is something. We don't want to miss something. If people are willing to travel for a particular center, if there's a group that's within that range that's considering something like this, why not include them? But basically, the number of questionnaires, the number of contacts would be limited proportionally to the area in which being surveyed. So you'll have more folks being surveyed in a heavier populated area than and less in a less populated area, if you follow me there.
And the questions would probably say, would you be willing to travel from here to San
right.
Simeon?
Are you willing? If this is your range. If this is what you're looking for.
Okay.
And that criteria, we don't set the exact questions. I think we'd be misleading ourselves. We get the concept. This is what we want to know. Is it feasible to have one or two pools? Is it feasible to have an indoor pool? Is it, all these basic questions that these entities want, and we're a stakeholder. And then that'll come back, and we'll know. And then if it says it's feasible and you should proceed with some design phase, then you're going to be spending the money that we're allocating now. And I think it's, like I said, I totally support getting this feasibility study done. I think that's very important for a lot of folks, this whole community, to say, hey, we did some research and this is what we've come up with. We move forward or we look for other partnerings, and that's what the foundation's been doing. So I think that there's the energy out there is all being spent well. It just matters we just need to keep going down the tracks a little further.
Okay. Other questions?
Yes. I'd like to speak to the phase one feasibility study. I'd like to know how much the group in Morro Bay is putting up for that, and I'd like to know what the and I think you've addressed the second
frequency of use, type of use, length of use, and seasonal variations from Cambria to the western portions of SLO that would drive an attendance. So if you would be able to drive here, they've got some questions for you. Analysis of age, gender, and social factors that would drive the program service needs. These are some of the things that are included in phase one. Identify the ability, willingness, and price. Points regarding each type of use. So, in quick bullet form, more details of each stakeholder's concerns would continue the stakeholders meeting, like I had mentioned. That would be from the county. They're interested in, is it really community, is there really a demand here? If they'd be willing to assist with capital for construction, but maybe not operational cost. So there are these are concerns that were inputted in previous meetings, and then they'll be updated later part of this month in our stakeholders meeting. And then as they get resolved, then the survey will continue. The survey has been delayed about a month and a half to address the stakeholders' concerns to make sure everybody is in approval.
And is this $5,000 the how much it's going to cost? Because that's how much the pool's putting in is $5,000. Do you know how much the phone survey costs?
You know, I don't have those numbers in front of me, but Terry Banco is in the audience. If, if the mayor would allow her to respond, maybe.
Sure.
Hi, I'm Terry Banco, and thank you for allowing me to respond. The Phase 1 feasibility study, the phone survey, is currently estimated at $14,000. We need to meet with the stakeholders to get the final concerns, then meet with the consultant, Ray Turco, to get the final analysis. We're still in negotiations, Morro Bay, the pool at Morro Bay, and Los Osos, to see who's going to pay what, but we're looking at each contributing half, so it would be $7,000 from Los Osos, $7,000 from Morro Bay. That's what we're currently looking at.
And then the $15,000 you want the city to put in is for actually drawings of the facility that you think you're going to hear from the public about what they want?
Correct. From Phase 1, we'll find out who can use it, how much can they afford to pay, how much will the public be willing to put towards this pool. And we are looking at doing a school and community pool. We want both the school to be able to use it and the community. I'm sorry, your question again was?
It was about cost and about...
Oh, so Phase 2 will actually be what kind of pool do we want to build? How many? How should it be programmed? How might we possibly fund it? So once we find out what kind of pools are going to be supported by the community and where that would best be, then if it's in Morro Bay, that's what the Phase 2 would be for, would be to actually design, program, and find out how to fund the aquatic center.
And did I get from either the report or somewhere else that if the community at large, being the region, says that they don't want it at the high school, then you're done? Did I read that somewhere?
I did say that, I think, but I misspoke. What I meant is our foundation is very much in favor of having this school be able to use the pool because California mandates that the aquatics is part of the PE curriculum. 25% of the PE curriculum should be aquatics. And our community, both Los Osos and Morro Bay, our teens are not being served in that manner. And so we are very much in favor of having a pool that can be used by the school and the community. The pool, for that to happen, it needs to be either on school ground or next to the school. Adjacent to the pool. It could be at the teen center. It could be on the property that's in front of it. So I don't mean to say that if it's not exactly on the school ground, I'm not in favor of it, but our foundation is very much in favor of it being able to be used by the school and the public.
And you think the school can't use it if it's in Los Osos or somewhere else in Morro Bay or outside the city limits?
They are. They can use it for teams. They can certainly bus them over there like they currently do to Cuesta or to Hardy Pool, but they cannot use the pool for academics, for the classes. For PE classes. It has to be at the school site or adjacent to it so that students could safely walk. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's what we're looking to do.
So the choices, will the public get these choices? The choices are that it be on school grounds so it can be for academics as well as team sports and the community, or it can be just somewhere in one of the two communities. So their team sports could use it and the community could use it, but they won't have it for academics.
I think it's more like, okay, you go to a household and they say, so how would you use the pool? How would you use the pool? What sort of income could you put towards using the pool? So you might have a family that has youngsters in it, and you might have a family, some seniors in it. So we're going to find out who would actually use the pool. So from that you would gather. So if there's many families that that would have students be big, because Kurt thinks that's good. And
any more questions for Ms. Benko over here?
Just one. Hi, Terry.
Hi.
Is the school's intent then, if it were on the school grounds, and I understand the, you know, kind of the gist of the difference of what you're talking about in the aquatic center, whether you would have a section of a heated pool like Cuesta does, or a children's pool separate from the lap pools and things.
Correct.
They would provide the property up front,
yes.
The front parking lot.
Yes.
And they would also have additional contributions, obviously, beyond that, or is that their only intent? Do you know?
They would have some maintenance contributions because currently they're spending up to $40,000 a year busing students. So that money is available to put towards maintenance. But all that needs to be discussed by the partners. Once we find out that it's feasible, we do phase two. We have the boards all sign the memorandum of understanding, and then we can possibly form a joint powers authority where all the details are worked about who is putting in what. Okay. But first we need to find out if it's feasible.
Right.
And
thank
that's
you.
The dot we're trying to connect.
Got it.
Okay.
No?
Yeah, hi, Terry. And I guess my question is a bit of a follow-up to who is putting in what, because it seems like at this point we're saying if phase one comes back with a focus on Los Osos as a scenario, that at that point we would pull our funds out. We'd be able to do that. My question is, then obviously Los Osos would be doing the same thing if the phase one information comes back with a result focused on Morro Bay. Is that true?
True. Well, it's possible. There's one scenario where Los Osos would actually pull out, but Los Osos has been trying to build a pool for over 16 years, and they actually have funds. So if they find out that a pool is not feasible in Los Osos, it's possible that they might disband, and then their money has to go to another nonprofit, and it's possible that it would come over here. So we're all just waiting to see what's feasible.
Okay.
So the survey is really just to decide which community to put the pool in.
Yes, and I'm an optimist. I think it's feasible in both communities. I might be the only one, but I mean, if you look around the state of California, communities have public pools for 7,000 is the maximum, and 14,000 is the minimum. So all over California, there are public pools for populations smaller and a little bit larger than ours. So I think that aquatics here, center here is feasible, and then after the sewer is built in Los Osos, a smaller center is feasible over there. But again, we just have to see what the community will support.
And if I read that in the report that there's, or maybe in somebody's letter that's saying that a pool can't or won't be built in Los Osos until after that sewer is done, which is going to be a number of years. So I guess I come back to my question, is it really necessary to do a phone survey and just move ahead with a pool?
Well, I think you have to have support from the community, even if it's just in Morro Bay. You got to know that there's going to be the support there.
I don't think that's in question.
But you still need to know what type of pool,
yeah.
And I think that's what their interest is. There's all different types of facilities that you would include or not include in the pool. Lap pools, hot pools, children's pools.
And don't we want
the aquatic center? Well, no, not necessarily. No.
So I'm with you. I'd like to just build the pool today. But I own a business. I own a fitness center. And I actually was encouraged to do a survey at my business. And it was quite extensive. And I found out that my members actually appreciated the programming. I thought they liked equipment. I had no idea. And it made a huge difference in my business. And I would not have known that had I not asked. So there is a value to doing a survey, and I'm with you. I'd like to move forward because obviously it's needed. But I think this will give us valuable information on what is really needed and what the community will support.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay.
Just one last question. Mr. Woods, is it you that represents us at the scoping meeting with the stakeholder group?
Yeah, I am one of the representatives. I've also city manager Andrea Luker. Has also represented the city. So we both have been attending the meetings.
All right, comments? Let's start.
I'll start with the ones that we got from the foundation that said that they were in support of the feasibility study, but they kind of couched it in that they would like some additional things included. And this is the letter that we all got. It says, we hope that you feel as though we have made a, what do we want to talk here? Following language for the motion of approval. That we contribute the $15,000 and that the city participate in the selection of the feasibility study contractor would be a criteria if we want to do that or not. That the first phase will answer questions provided by the pool foundation besides the those that you've already generated. So whether you're willing to ask more questions or not. And three, that we have some kind of
partnership. So we're going out there and we're saying, per your direction, is to meet with the community groups to go after this pool. I believe we all are equal right now in our review of the feasibility study and the criteria and how it's administered, and then the review. That's how we started the partnership with the district and the county. I can't see why it wouldn't continue that way through the feasibility study. Though this group and the other groups have had their differences, I think that fundamentally the feasibility study, everyone agrees, has to happen. Mm-hmm. And the resources are being pushed into the special interest group, the community group, in this case the foundation. Mm-hmm. Whichever one it is, that's where it is. As a city and as a stakeholder, contributing the $15,000 to the feasibility study is not part of the partnership per se. It's our quest as an agency to get the feasibility study done, to follow through on some commitment that we've had in the past, and to move the project forward. Whether the district or the county are contributing the feasibility study is irrelevant, I think, as far as your weigh in and vote. I think your partnership needs to be equal all the way through the evaluation and through the project. The fact that you're throwing $15,000 in phase two is earmarked for the design of a pool in this city. And that's what it has to be. If it's designed anywhere else and it's feasible to be only in an area that's outside our city limits, you won't have the jurisdiction to allocate your $15,000 of parking lot fees. So I think that the misuse of funds is not even a question. So the $15,000 is for the design phase two of a pool that's met the criteria of the feasibility phase one that puts a pool of some sort, some shape, in Morro Bay. And that's when we want to move the program forward, get the stakeholders with an MOU together, get phase two together, and have it funded and ready to go. So I think you're right. Terry's right. You have an opportunity here to move this thing forward as the market prices drop and our desire moves in.
Then if the only place the pool can be built with our money, $15,000 for the feasibility, is in Morro Bay, why are we even asking people about other locations?
And the reason why we ask the questions is because we have more than our interest at stake. We have the counties and the districts. And so when you have three groups coming together, you can't look at it one-sided and want just a pool. When it comes back and says a pool is feasible, but it's only a pool that's 10 by 20, well, that's a little different than a pool that's 25 meters by 25 meters. Follow me? So what comes back in the feasibility study is more than just build a pool or not build a pool. It's the type of pool, the type of programs that you should be having, the type of revenues that you should be seeking, the type of subsidies that you could experience. Those are the things that are all tied into this feasibility study.
Council,
that's
the
information that you need.
I will remind you that the needs assessment is the first step. You're not funding the needs assessment. The needs assessment is the first step. It's phase one. Depending on what happens with the needs assessment, then you're asked to fund $15,000 if the pool is indicated for Morro Bay. If it's not indicated for Morro Bay, that money cannot be used.
Then why would we commit it tonight since we don't know the outcome of the survey?
I believe that the RFP that went out is needing to be awarded, and that's the request at this point. I certainly Terry for additional information.
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt. Probably because in the ease of trying to get an RFP and get a better price for both of those, I would probably say that's the reason why they did that, is if you can combine them both into one RFP, it would save money. But you can ask that question on why not two separate RFPs.
And at this point, the process would be that phase one would be completed. We'd receive a presentation of those results, and then if those results are pointing towards a favorable atmosphere for Morro Bay and a pool located here, we'd then affirm our affirmation of what we have. with commitment to phase two.
We can certainly bring back the information to you from the needs assessment or needs analysis. Obviously, if it doesn't indicate Morro Bay, the expenditure is not going to happen. But I think it's important tonight to provide that funding. And certainly with your motion, you can put the caveat that it is for a pool to be located in Morro Bay. Certainly the organization, I think, would be remiss if they did not do a needs assessment. If you just decided within yourselves what you thought was important for the community, because as Ms. Benko said, sometimes we're surprised by what the community feels is important. We might feel it's important to have a slide at the pool or a recreational opportunities, a zero entry. But if that's not the information that comes back, we certainly don't want to build something that's not going to meet the needs of the majority of the community.
Carla, any comments or questions?
No, I certainly see the need for it and support it.
Okay. Noah, anything further?
Concerns with the stakeholders and let them generate the detailed questions that kind of bring back the information so we can base our decisions on going into phase two or not.
Well, I have to agree with that. If you're going to hire somebody to do a survey for you, they know what they're doing. You need to let them phrase the questions the way they think they're going to get the right kind of result for what you're looking for.
No offense at Mr. Sturm, but he is an art historian. He's not a statistician.
Okay. Obviously, he's hiring out as one. Okay, my comments, I'm going to give a little extra survey information here. I went to Kids Club as a guest last week, and the kids all said what they would like to see in Morro Bay. And I just want to share some of these because we've got some time tonight. Emmy would like to see a swimming pool in Morro Bay. And so would Andrew. And then we have some people that want a little bit more. Nick wants to see a huge water park in Morro Bay. And so does Juniper. And so does Christopher. So I just thought I'd share those drawings. That's what the kids would like to see in Morro Bay. And also one more that we already responded to tonight, Owen would like to see a arcade. So I just wanted to share those. It was so cute that the kids drew them for me. So you can add those to your survey already. I'm in favor of going ahead with this. I think the first step is to find out if it's going to work. We've got to do this. So once that's determined, then we can move ahead as is appropriate at that time. So, motion? Anybody?
Sure. I move to approve $15,000 of the park in lieu funds to complete phase two of the Aquatic Center feasibility study.
Do I hear a second? All right, I'll second. Discussion?
My discussion is that I'm in favor, and I appreciate being educated about the need for the phase one feasibility study for the phone survey. I'm not comfortable allocating the $15,000, however, until I know what the result of that survey is.
From my understanding, we have not with this motion tonight. Second, that's correct.
You have not allocated the money?
Yes.
No, we're asking you to allocate the $15,000 for a pool
we have not
only to be built in Morro Bay. So if the again, if the needs assessment comes back that says the pool will not be built in Morro Bay, this money will not be allocated. It cannot be allocated.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay. 3-1. If anyone else opposed. Okay. Future agenda items? Anybody? None? Whoa! How did that happen? Okay. And I was supposed to have the quote, and I forgot, so Noah said he would step in and do our closing quote for me.
Yeah, this is my little day planner, it turns out. We've got a pretty... This is appropriate, and it's to prepare us for tomorrow, perhaps, if we get some real rain. And I hope we're all ready for that and listen to Mr. Alger's recommendations to batten down the hatches. But here we go. This is from Mark Twain. Throw off the bow lines, sail away from the safe harbor, catch the trade winds in your sails, explore, dream, discover.
Great. And with that, we're adjourned. Thank you, Noah.
Thank you.